Good evening, everybody. This is Tri-State Sports Guy coming to you live from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma alongside my co-host Danny Santarella. Tony B, not in studio. The only thing I'm going to say, in a word, sketchy. Who knows what he's up to?
Yeah.
He's doing something behind the scenes, just paying bills.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hope he's pre-ordering a statue for me.
He might be working on some sort of, he's working on a, he got a bronze guy. He's got an under-the-table bronze guy. That's what he's working on right now. Neil hopefully is going to join us a little later on. Neil's still, I think he's on week two of his shoot for his pilot. I think it's going to work out. It's either that or he's just avoiding us until the Giants win a game. It's one or the other.
Well, he's not going to have to avoid us that much. So.
I can't wait to talk about it. I can't wait to the picks just to talk about that game.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, even right now, we're about an hour and a half away from picks. I'm not sure who I'm picking in that game.
You're not.
No. I mean, you got an 0-16 favorite.
Yeah.
And, like, Giants fans are like, well, we got this game in the book.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen? I can't wait to talk about that game. We got to talk about your boy Josh Freeman.
Best quarterback in the league.
Well, here's what that's going to lead us into our first topic.
Yeah.
Because we've had a million debates on a Facebook page about top 10. Everybody likes rankings. It was like what Woody Johnson said. Everybody loves lists, and we love lists and rankings. Everybody does, just like a human nature thing. And so we had the top 10, and I think you could – most sports fans would agree on the top four. Do you have any disagreement with the top four of Rodgers, Brees, Peyton, and Brady? Last year, I took some flack because I put Brady first.
Right.
I still – I mean, as great as – Peyton is. I don't think it's like he's separated himself that much. With what Brady's doing now, as much as I hate the guy and as much as I hate the Patriots, the guy is an unbelievable quarterback. But the top four is the top four, in my opinion.
I agree.
And I don't think you should just, like, say, well, we have to make, you know, it seems to be like you have to make it rounded up to five because that's just a number.
Right.
But I'm just curious. So then there's that second level of quarterbacks, which I think most people agree to an extent of what that second level is. The Big Ben – Eli is in that mix, Matt Ryan, the rest. But I think a real debatable question is, as a Vikings fan, so you're in what I would say some sort of disarray at quarterback.
Yep.
Would you say that? I mean, Christian Ponder.
I can't stand him. I like Castle.
And I said before the season, I'm like, Matt Castle's going to wind up being the starting quarterback before the season's over, and he's going to be fine. And I think he can be fine.
I got to be honest. I'm interested to see Freeman play.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish it wasn't against the Giants because of the dislike I have for them. But the game means really nothing. Both teams stink to high heaven. But I am curious to see Freeman play. So go ahead.
I mean, Freeman had his little moments there.
Yep.
That second season, the second full season there, when he had like 28 touchdowns and six picks or something, like, you know, very, very efficient numbers. And you look at this guy and you're like, this guy can be a real pocket passer. He's got the size. He's got the mobility. But he's not I still wouldn't call him the mobile Cam Newton type. He's got mobility, but more in the ilk of like Donovan McNabb, David Garrard, some mobility, even Ben Roethlisberger, size, mobility, can escape some pressure. I thought he actually was going to take that next step after that season, and he's done nothing but, you know, go on and back. So I don't think it's the end of the world that he's your starting quarterback, but the reason I think it's a good topic is who is that fifth quarterback? And I'd say there's 8 to 10 guys in that next group.
Yep.
Week to week, but if you were right now, all of a sudden something happened, all the quarterbacks, you couldn't take the top four, all the rest of the quarterbacks are in this free agent pool, and you're the Minnesota Vikings, who do you want leading your team this year? You're not thinking like a project, like saying, you know, I'm going to look for, you know, what's going to look good in 2015, 2016, right now. I think that's the only way to really say who the fifth best quarterback is, not based on their resume. And that makes them just look what they're doing now. Like, you've seen enough. Bodies of work. Not just a little flash in the pan who might not translate. Right now, who would be the guy you would want quarterbacking the Minnesota Vikings, throw those four guys out? Who's your guy?
Well, first of all, I looked at, you know, I thought about a guy like Rivers. I thought about Eli. I looked at the young guys, so, you know, you just canceled that out with your point. But I thought about Luck and Griffin and Wilson or whatever. And I'll tell you, the guy I just kept coming back to looking at it, and he has 2 Super Bowl rings, is Big Ben.
Yeah.
He's tough. He's mobile. He's got the leadership, intangibles, and things like that. You said it to me, Sam, when you texted me. You said you're talking about your Vikings. That's in disarray, like you said. I want a guy that's been there, done it, has shown he can win the big games, throw the big passes, stand in there, take a hit right in his mouth. And to me, guys like Ryan and guys like Rivers, aren't those guys that I would want. Now, you know all the QB ratings, and you can throw all the numbers at me.
And I'm not even going to go with that. That's not going to be part of my – right.
The guy I would want, if I couldn't have those first four, would be Big Ben. And I looked at some numbers today, which is rare. I don't often look at NFL numbers. I just – there's just something about him that I was like, if he was in purple and gold, that's the guy. That's the guy I would want. He's tough.
I'm actually very glad you said Big Ben, because when I first threw that question out to you in our little show prep, Big Ben, I kept coming back to Big Ben. Big Ben's going to be the guy I go with. And I was wondering if I was biased because he seems to kill the Jets. Not just in that playoff game where he was able, you know, he just seems to always convert that third down when you need third down conversion.
Yeah.
And I know you watched that last week's game and they were 6-16 against the Jets, but it seemed like when they needed a third down, Big Ben can do it. Nobody could take him down. Mo Wilkerson has him for his safety. He's able to shed that.
Yeah.
He just always seems to make that play. And I don't think if you looked at him just stat-wise, you could say, oh, yeah, he's got the stats to beat a Phillip Rivers or one of those, even Matt Ryan. And I know Matty Ice has got this Matty Ice nickname because he's got these fourth-quarter comebacks, which I think is one of the more overrated stats, as crazy as that sounds. I mean, Mark Sanchez led the league in fourth-quarter comebacks in his second season. Does that mean he was so great because that, like, separated him?
No.
Mostly because the reason they were behind because he played poorly in the first half,
right.
Which has been my argument about Eli Manning. If Eli Manning could put together a good three quarters, he wouldn't always have to lead these heroic drives.
Yeah.
But he can't. And in reality, I saw a crazy stat about Eli Manning that since he's come into the league, with 3 minutes or less to go in the game, within a score, he's thrown more picks than anybody, and it's not even close. He's thrown 15 picks. The second highest is like 11 or 12. It's not even close. And so I'm going with a guy that you're going to hate because he does have the numbers. But I watched this guy play. Let me ask you this. Who's going to be your guest that I'm going to go with?
You want to know?
Because you're looking at me like you're so angry. I haven't even said who I'm going to say.
Well, because you said I'm going to be angry. So the first two names that came to my mind, because I know you can't pick Rodgers, because he's already in top four.
Yeah.
The first two names were Stafford and Cutler, just because they're in the Vikes division. And I don't think...
No.
You're enough of a silly goose to pick one of those.
No. But people are going to listen to my pick and say that I'm a silly goose because this guy gets killed all over the place. And it's Tony Romo.
Oh,
I watched Tony Romo. You watched him this last game.
That does upset me.
He makes so many plays within the pocket. You're talking about mobile guys. I mean, even last week against the Redskins, a guy came in untouched on a blitz. And he was able to avoid him, get to the outside, and throw a perfect pass to the corner of the end zone. And he does that time and time again. And all these people want to talk about how he's a choke artist. And that started with him dropping a snap on a field goal, which what coach has a starting quarterback as your field goal holder? Whatever. That's where it started. And then people want to point to all these picks. Everybody has these picks late in the game. And the fact of the matter is, the one stat I will throw out, since – he's come into the league. You know what's the best quarterback rating in the fourth quarter? And it's not even close. It's Tony Romo.
Yeah.
It's not even close. This guy is so, like, underrated because he's got this, and people made up their mind, and it had to do with my little thing, my little article where I call people idiots. He got it in their mind. He's got to choke card it. And they want to bring up that interception he had against the Broncos, which I want to talk about. We didn't get to talk about last week. It was 2nd and 16, 2 minutes and 20 to go in the game. They're on their own 23-yard line. He throws a pick. It was an amazing interception. Still probably not a throw he should have made. So say he just puts that ball in his back pocket, takes a sack, or throws it away. You know, it's 3rd and 16, 2:20 to go in the game. You're on your own 23-yard line or whatever it was. He wasn't going to win that game. They weren't going to convert that first down. They're going to punt it away and give the ball to Peyton Manning. They weren't going to win that game. The only way they were going to beat Peyton Manning was him taking chances like that. He did it all game long. It was unbelievable. The one time it doesn't pay off, that's what happens when you take chances.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a choke artist. He's a choke artist. If he eats that ball, they lose the game anyway.
I know. I'm telling you this. And I don't hate on Tony Romo. I think too many people get on his bandwagon a little bit sometimes.
Who gets on his bandwagon? I'm not the only guy.
No, I mean in terms of people saying, like, you know, what you just said. Like, boy, he gets killed on, he gets this. But the reason is he gets killed on is because of who he plays for. I've always thought that. Because you take Roger Staubach, you take Troy Aikman, and in the middle you put Danny White in there, and Danny White won more big games than Tony Romo has.
Mm-hmm.
And probably that he will, maybe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he was a quarterback, Romo, for my Vikings, there would be Frank Tarkington, who's a bum, by the way, and he would be next.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be Culpepper. It wouldn't be Cunningham. It wouldn't be, what's his name there? Sean Salisbury, like guys that had some decent years for them, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They would look at him in Minnesota and go like this, you go, geez, you know, if it wasn't for the crappy team we had around Romo, boy, was he good. But he gets killed out in Dallas, and I guess to some point you should in Dallas or Pittsburgh or San Fran. You're going to get killed on if you're not Montana or Staubach, or if you're not, you know, Bart Starr in Green Bay. They're going to kill on you. And so Romo does get persecuted at times, and definitely wrongly.
Right.
But he's in Dallas, and he doesn't win big games.
Well, but you know? Right. And I think that, you know, you look at Dallas, you look at the NFL, they're one of the most dysfunctional teams over the last 16 years as anybody. You got your owner, who's also your GM, making personnel decisions.
It's ridiculous.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, when they had their success in the 90s, it was a different Cowboys program. And since then, you know, they tried the Bill Parcells and Drew Bledsoe era and a couple different variations. They got Tony Romo. I think if you put Tony Romo in a stable system, you know, those mistakes that he makes will get swallowed up. I mean, every quarterback, you're not going to find a quarterback who doesn't make mistakes. It's insane. And this guy, it's not like his playoff stats are just atrocious. I know he's 1-3 in the playoffs. He's not atrocious in the playoffs. You know, it's not like he's got a 50 quarterback rating and he's just a joke. I mean, in the game they won, he played very well. He's played well in some games. And his first start, he put them in a position to win and dropped a snap. It wasn't his fault quarterbacking-wise. I just think that if I'm on a team, and I'm looking at it even as a Jets, I mean, you know, we talked about Geno Smith last week, and he's done more than I thought he would have done by now. But he's by no means the answer or anything like that. You know, we've seen a lot of guys fizzle out. Josh Freeman as an example, who could show glimpses but can never really take that next step. And so I'm not by no means – I'm just looking at if it was me and that you have this crop of quarterbacks, and I like Matt Ryan. I like Phillip Rivers. Like, these guys are all – I love this, Ben Roethlisberger. And I kept debating between Ben Roethlisberger and Tony Romo. And I just got back to the fact that I think Ben Roethlisberger extends drives as good as anybody. I think that he's always had this backbone of a good defense. Up until the last couple years, he's always had a good running game. Up until, you know, I mean, for a while, he always had that. I think his first Super Bowl, he was just a game manager, and he did that. And I love Ben Roethlisberger. But I would say if I'm going to have a quarterback, and that doesn't mean that, like, Ben Roethlisberger's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame someday for winning those two Super Bowls and doing what he did there. And Tony Romo has no chance of being in the Hall of Fame. But I'm telling you, if I'm in heaven – someday, and I'm picking a team, a Sandlot team, I'm picking Tony Romo over Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, see, I'm going to go with the guy that, you know, and I know the argument, you could say, what if Romo quarterbacked those Pittsburgh teams? But he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, okay? So
Ben, you go by your own eyesight. Like, I'm throwing out numbers here, like the fourth quarter numbers, which is a real number, just to combat, but that's not my whole argument. Just from watching this guy, I just think he makes so many plays, and he's got that little bit of escapability within the pocket to buy himself time and make amazing throws that a lot of guys can't make.
Yeah, but what about, and I'm being serious,
yeah.
It's not funny, but what about during the summer? Like, let's say you're the coach of a team and you have him on your ball club,
yeah.
And the U.S. Open's coming around in golf, and now there's OTAs and there's other things going on, and he's out there trying to qualify for the U.S. Open like he's, Bernard Langer or something like that. I think he gets himself in trouble with a lot of that stuff. I think he gets himself in trouble with the high-profile women he's dated, all the things he does off the field. It just seems, and I don't know the guy, and neither do you.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems sometimes like football is not the most important thing. It seems that way. I can't prove it, and I'm sure it's high on his list of what's important to him, but I think he gets in trouble for that, whereas a guy like Brady, who dates a friggin' supermodel, he seems like football.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers seems like, you know, and I'm pissed off I didn't get drafted faster on the first day of the draft, and it's football for me. And for Breeze, it's football. And with Romo, it's like, boy, you're out there trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. Like, you're a one handicap. Tigers are +6. You're trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. You know what I mean? That's why I think he gets in trouble.
I don't disagree with you. My only argument against that is this. I think that every human being deals with adversity, deals with things in different ways. And I think that living in the spotlight of being the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys and all the scrutiny that comes with it, this guy needs a release. A guy like Peyton Manning doesn't need a release. Like, this guy can live it. I personally would need a release from that, and I think he needs that. And I think that everybody's a little bit different. I disagreed with Neil's comment a couple weeks ago when he said that he didn't think Eli studied the playbook enough and all that. I don't think that's Eli's problem at all. I think preparation-wise, because you could look at the pre-snap reads that he makes, and I put him up there with anybody but maybe his brother. I mean, I think that that's what Eli's strength is, so I really disagree with that. But I think that some guys just need this release of things. And it's, and I made that argument about Mark Sanchez before you joined the show when they made this, you know, big thing about the video he had where he was with two beautiful half-naked women. And I'm like, he's in the off season. This is what he needs. And we're going to get to baseball, too, and there's guys like, you know, Yasiel Puig and he hot dogs and people get all upset about it. That's what makes – if he didn't have that, I don't think he'd be that player. And I, the example I'll give you is like Jose Reyes. When he was really on fire during those like 05, 06 runs, and everybody hated him because he was like really energetic and all this stuff, and Willie Randolph wanted to reel him in because that's not the Yankee way to play baseball, he took a step back. And I've met guys that are like that. I've met guys who play sports and need to go out boozing the night before because they need like – and it doesn't work for everybody. And I think that works for Tony Romo. I don't think he would be a better quarterback if he was this film guy. I think he needs like – if you watch him play the game – he needs that, like, release. Just like guys like Kurt Warner and Tim Tebow need the religious thing, and they need that release.
Yeah.
It's a different release, but it's a release from football.
I agree with you. I just think if Romo had the wins, if he had those big wins, if he'd been in a Super Bowl, those kinds of things,
yeah,
people would give him a pass. People would give him a pass for saying, hey, what you just said. Hey, you know what? The dude likes to play golf. So let him play his golf. Let him date Carrie Underwood. Let him date Jessica Simpson. Whatever he wants to do, he wins. If Aaron Rodgers went out and started dating Jennifer Aniston tomorrow, people would be able to go, dude's got a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
If he didn't have the Super Bowl, they'd
cruise. Well, I agree with you, but I think that's part of my problem I have with the argument.
And I know.
Because they have that, they get a pass to do whatever. And, you know, it's funny because Warren Sapp was on one of the talk shows this week, and he was talking about the Giants. I'm like, what's wrong with the Giants? And he said, and Warren Sapp is an outspoken guy, and I'm a big Warren Sapp fan. He was like, they need to get off the Subway commercials. Every time I turn on TV, there's a New York Giant pitching something.
Yeah.
They need to get off of that, which I'm a little surprised by because they were doing that when they were in 2011 when they won a Super Bowl. Now all of a sudden it's
that's
a problem.
The thing. They're not winning.
But so now that's the problem. It wasn't the problem back
then. I know
then.
That, but I'm saying, but winning cures everything. And moreover, it explains everything.
It explains when everything to the idiots like us.
Absolutely. But when you win, you're fine. And that's most all fans are fine with that. If the Kansas Jayhawks went out and did all these crazy things and stuff like that, and they brought home a national championship,
like bought the most highly touted guy in the world, by buying his family a house up in Canada.
Okay, but I'm just saying, I wouldn't care when they don't win the big game, and I see Bill Self out drinking till 3 a.m. or something like that. You know, it would burn me in my backside a little bit. That's all I'm saying.
So what I think makes this argument interesting is it's because there isn't a right or wrong answer. It's what you think. If you were like, and we all pretend we're talent evaluators, and we watch these games, and, you know, I played high school quarterback. I know nothing about what it's like to even be a college-level quarterback, and, you know, nothing. I know no more than you in the fact that I played high school quarterback. But I watch it, and I just see things that he does that other people don't do. And so I'm not willing to just throw away the fact that the guy doesn't win big games, but in a spot where I'm going to just hand the ball to somebody, I'm going to look at a guy and say, this guy's had – he's done what he's done against all odds. He's playing in this just high pressure America's team. Filling, you know, he's the next Troy Aikman, Roger Staubach, all this stuff. He puts up these crazy numbers, and when it doesn't pan out his way, then he's a bust. Almost like Donovan McNabb. I mean, Donovan McNabb, he's like, even now after the game, he's still not appreciated. This guy was one of the best quarterbacks in the league, had one of the most efficient quarterback ratings as far as interceptions to attempts, interceptions to touchdowns. Like, was very efficient. Did all that, but didn't win a Super Bowl, so he's a bust. And he walked into the league getting booed, and he left the league getting booed.
Yep.
And it's like nothing to do. And you're like, this guy can't get appreciated. He's Donovan McNabb.
Well,
he'd be the best Jet of all time. And so is Tony Romo. I don't want to hear anything about Joe Namath. I'm so sick of ever hearing Joe Namath.
There are certain cities in which you have to win. And Philly's one of them. Green Bay's one of them, whatever.
Because Philly's this town that does nothing but win. And they think they need to win.
No, you know what it is? It's because there's nothing to do with Philly. Because Dan Marino is a hero.
Yeah.
In Miami. You know why? Because there's everything to do in Miami.
How about Archie freaking Manning never had a winning record?
I know that.
And he's a hero in New Orleans.
I mean, that's what it is. Winning does it all. Winning cures everything. And especially in certain markets, and you know that, and I know that. And Philly's one of those things where, you know, McNabb, yeah, he was an excellent quarterback. You know what I mean? But in Miami, he might be lifted up a little bit higher onto a bigger pedestal. I mean, Dan Marino was a million times better than Donovan McNabb, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
There's certain cities that forgive better. You know, like Indianapolis, had Peyton Manning never won, they might have forgiven him, not Jim Irsay, but apparently, like, everybody else would have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's certain cities like San Diego, Rivers is probably a hero out there, even though he's lost every big game he's played in just about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he's a hero because there's a million things to do in San Diego that take your mind off it. In Philly, what do you have?
So maybe it's my problem being a Met, Jets and Mets fan that I look at, like, I don't look at a sports season. I go into a sports season saying, give me important games at the end of the season. That's all I ask for in the Mets. Make September matter. All I ask for in the Jets is make December matter that I care about it. And then it's exciting because to me, it's like once you get to the playoffs, it's always a crapshoot. I think that you see wild card teams win, you see 97 teams win in the playoffs. You see all these things other than basketball where the best team typically always wins. I think in football and baseball, you get into the playoffs, a hot team here, big play here, bounce goes this way. So just give me something to root for late in the season. So I'm not that, like Neil, it's all about rings, it's all about rings, it's all about rings, because I'm not a Giant or Yankee fan, and that's what they think of. I think I'd be a miserable sports fan if I felt that way. If I couldn't appreciate the talent of a guy like Donovan McNabb or Tony Romo, I would feel miserable. And it partially makes me upset about the way that Mark Sanchez's Jets career is going to end. Because he's the last, you know, he's kind of going to leave here as a laughing stock, and everybody's going to remember as the butt fumble and these crazy things. But you see him on the sideline cheering on, you know, Geno Smith and how excited he was. Now, Geno Smith gives him a lot of credit. Like, this guy, even when we were competing, he was giving me all these things. This guy was a really good guy. He gave the Jets a lot of good memories, and he's always been remembered as a laughing stock because he played in New York, and it's stupid to me.
Yeah.
I can never be that way, but. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We need some hockey talk. I do want to get into a couple more football talks. If you do want to call in, the number, as always, I'm going to take a bunch of calls today, 347-637-2306. We're with Tri-State Sports Guys, Mike DeBomba, Dan Santarello. We'll be right back.
These days, my dollar just doesn't go as far. In my car, it gets me about 6 miles. On my cell phone, maybe 4 minutes. But at McDonald's, my dollar gets me through the entire day. From sausage McMuffin with egg for breakfast to a tasty double cheeseburger. Thanks to McDonald's Dollar Menu, my dollar gets me right where I want to be. Satisfied.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. On a beautiful Wednesday evening, me and Danny Santarella here. The only last point I want to talk about with football briefly, and we're not going to get into the Adrian Peterson stuff because it's not the kind of show we do. But you had mentioned you'd seen the Frontline documentary about concussions in NFL, and I'd never – agree with Mike Francesa very, very rarely. But a point that he made, which I thought was very valid, interesting enough, you know, the book came out, whatever it was, Book of Secrets, something about, you know, how they kept it from, you know, the NFL secretly known about this concussion issue. And he goes, you know, you could sit and watch on a Sunday starting at 10 o'clock in the morning watching pregame shows, you watch halftime shows, you watch postgame shows, you watch the recap shows on Sunday night. There was not a mention of that. And it shows you the dominance that the NFL has over, the media that they control. And it's because, you know, they're granting these gigantic contracts to people. And the thing that came out today was, the NFL's thinking, because their Thursday night numbers aren't great, they're thinking about adding a Thursday night game. And some people are going in the other direction, like they need to get rid of it because you're saturating the market at that point. I love Thursday night football. Absolutely love it. Are you in the same boat? I mean, I love the fact that that's available.
Unless there's a college game. Truthfully.
Okay. Yeah. But even if you just love that this is an option.
It's great. I wrote an article about saying when you find something on that's unexpected, like late night sports, it's the greatest thing in the world. So, yeah, finding an 8 o'clock football game on a Thursday, college or pro, I lean towards college.
You know what that was to me as a kid? I remember I didn't get a TV in my room until I was probably like 13 or 14 years old. And I got a TV, and I remember I was big time into college basketball back then. Like, I put it in Major League Baseball number one, college basketball number two. And I watched anytime college basketball was on, I'd watch it. And you'd get those late night games and they'd be on. And it was on ESPN because back then ESPN didn't have all these crazy shows. I would love it. I would sit in my room with the volume down so my parents think I'm sleeping, and I'd watch the whole game.
Do you remember Big Mondays? They had the 7 o'clock Big East game, 9 o'clock Big 12, and then 12 o'clock was the Mountain West Conference where, like, Rick Majerus was running around.
Oh, yeah.
Wyoming and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would watch that religiously.
It would be fantastic. Back when, like, Arkansas was good.
Absolutely.
And Corliss Williamson.
Tremendous.
And Scotty Thorpe, and you'd watch these guys, and I knew, all, you know, you could pick any major team, I'd be able to tell you their starting five because of those nights. And so I agree with you. I don't get to do that now, and I kind of – not that I dislike college basketball now. I just don't have the time to – really, college basketball is something you got to keep up with. And so to watch a lot of games, I don't have the time to do that. But to me, that's how NFL on Thursday nights is. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to it. There's the fantasy aspect, which you don't get, but, like, if you have a guy playing, it's there. But for me, you know, the way my life works with two kids, a lot of times my oldest daughter and my wife will go to bed, and I'm up with a newborn, and to have that there in my back pocket to just be like, I could sit here with my little three-month-old and watch an NFL game. It's fantastic.
Awesome.
Now, Francesco went on the thing like he thought they were watering it down about why the ratings are bad. The ratings are bad to me for a couple of reasons. I think that a lot of people watch – the reason the ratings are so high on the Sundays because there's nothing else on, and there's those not real football fans who will get in a group and like, okay, we're going to watch football because it's like the thing to do.
Right.
And unless you're a football fan, you're not watching. But for a football fan, how could you not love – the ability, no matter who's playing, you can complain about the fact that it's the Browns and the Bills or whatever it is. The NFL football game on a Thursday night, I hope they never get rid of it. To have two games, I think it's a little much.
Yeah.
I think they're just floating that out there. I don't think they need to do that.
I mean, I think, you know, for me, like I said, I'm going to watch a college football game that's on over that. And now this time of year.
But let me ask you, is it like any? Are you just that much into it? If it's not a game that you're, I guess, is that
I watched
like
the Western Kentucky game last night.
You just really like college football.
You know what I mean? There's Bobby Petrino running around coaching. But I'm saying, like, right now, this time of year, you're going to lose me on a Thursday night. If it's not the Vikings, you're going to lose me because I'm going to watch college. I'm going to watch hockey or college basketball coming up soon, or I'm going to watch the baseball playoffs or whatever. So Thursdays, it doesn't feel like a football night to me.
Yeah.
So to your point, I guess, you're losing me as someone who watches the pros on Sunday because Thursday doesn't quite feel it. If it's the only thing on, then absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll watch the Falcons play the Ravens or something, you know, but for me, I'd rather watch other sporting events. It's not my game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to still pick playoff baseball when they're competing
right.
Each other. I'm always going to watch playoff baseball over it. But, you know, typically the football game ends a little bit later, and you get to watch that, and I think it's awesome. So I do like the fact of that, and I hope they don't change. I thought it was actually a very good idea that they do that. I don't want to see them add another game because they don't need to. Let it be a standalone game.
Yeah.
But let's transition over to some hockey games.
Okay.
Is it time to panic over in Rangerville yet or no? Can we talk about that yet? I mean, you're not willing to let it go because you love them in the preseason.
I got to be honest with you. I still love them. I still love them. I think when they get home on some home ice, some home cooking, some Eastern Conference games, doing things like that, they've been getting work in the Elaine Vigneault system, you know, this man-to-man system that they're running now opposed to the zone they were running last year, and guys are missing their coverages. And, you know, the thing I always look for as someone who loves to watch it is the willingness to gain the center line, chip the puck in, and then go get it. And go get it, like, with a vengeance, and they don't have it. When you watch them.
But why, though? Like, explain to me, hockey, like, why? This seems like the toughest guys that are, like, you know, why is that missing? How could that be a coaching strategy? Wouldn't that just be, like, if you play hockey, you want to go after the puck and have that aggressiveness? Or am I just missing?
Well, I think, you know, to someone who doesn't watch it, it would be
yeah,
like
that's what I mean.
there's a Ray Lewis in football, and then there's linebackers that don't.
But they have
quite
the same personnel.
There's just guys that don't stick their nose in there with the same, you know, ferocity that they do. And watching the Rangers game, like, if you watched them last week in San Jose or you watched their game in L.A., there really wasn't that willingness when you see, like, a guy like Stepan, who I think is a phenomenal player. He's chipping the puck in, and then you see, you know, Richards is hanging by the boards, and Richards should be in the corner trying to muck the puck
out. Well, Richards, the guy who just hated Tort so much, I mean, that's why he gave up, and this was going to be his, like, renaissance year.
That's,
and he's still doing that type of crap?
Well, it just seems like he's playing, trying to put it politely, but playing, like, a little bit of, like, a baby almost. And when you watch them, like, you watch the Islanders, and the Islanders have nowhere near the talent the Rangers have, in my opinion.
I don't watch the Islanders.
Yeah, you should. You shouldn't. You're not an Islander.
Oh, I thought you were just, like, making a sit, like a blanket. Like, I watch the Islanders. Okay.
Yeah. But here's what I saw last night when they were playing the Sabres. Okay? Tavares, the captain, he's in the corner. I forget which Sabre he gets in a little tussle with. But next thing you know, there's some bows being thrown and a little bit of this and that. And the next thing you know, there comes Matt Molson and Kyle Okposo, neither of whom is like a particularly tough guy. But there was a bit of a fracas, and there were some penalties handed out because they were gonna battle for each other.
Yeah.
Even though they're not good, and they're not really probably going anywhere, and they have horrible goaltending, they're willing to battle. And Tavares was in there as the captain.
Yeah.
He's kind of the same kind of player as Richards in terms of his mindset, but he was in there battling for that loose puck in a 3-2 game. And his teammates know that, and they strap for him. When you watch the Rangers, they seem like they're 20 different players, not one team right now. And I think a lot of that, and I wasn't really going to buy into the Tortorella to Vigneault, transition, but the more I watch them, the more I see a team that's just kind of not – they're not gelling, they're not meshing. Maybe there's different points of their scheme that they're not picking up on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you watch a team like San Jose who's playing great, Colorado's playing great. You watch a team like Detroit that's always good, and those guys they look like an amoeba, like just one blob moving in the right direction at all times, and the Rangers don't look like that. And the Rangers have way too much talent. And I know some of my Rangers buddies think that I was trying to use reverse psychology.
That was my old co-host, the big
yeah,
joke.
Not even close. I mean, I don't mind the Rangers. I mind Rangers fans.
Yeah.
I don't mind the Rangers a lot. I love the original 16s, which I know bothers you.
It's like your goal. It's like you're going to sneak it
bring
in.
Bring
like,
up every week.
You have to.
I have to bring
it's
up.
It's like the Where's Waldo of the show. Like if you're the first caller calling when Dan mentioned, you know, the
yeah.
original six.
You win a bumper sticker.
You win a high five from Tony Dario and some free oil.
Yes, yeah, so you know, we got to get you, like, down to the pub one night and watch, like, a Montreal-Toronto game.
Yeah.
It could change you a little bit.
Well, Toronto's got a great fan base. It's an inside joke because we did our top 10 fan bases early on in our show, and I'll be honest. So we're going through fan bases, and I feel like I had 15 that I was going to do, and I'm like, I feel like we're new to the show, man. I got to add a hockey fan
yeah.
base, and I was like, I can't just do the Rangers. I've been to a Rangers game and it was sick. I can't just be the Rangers. So I'm starting to do some research on some things. I'm like, well, Toronto seems to be really into hockey. I mean, I don't know. They seem to be into it, so I threw them in there. Nobody gave me any crap for it.
Yeah.
I'm sure hockey fans are like, Mike's an idiot. The first thing, you joined this show, the first thing, you had a look on your face that you were going to close fist punch me. Right?
The problem is,
yeah,
like,
if you didn't like me,
I would have absolutely
been
all jacked. No questions asked.
It would have been, and then you would just pick me up because you're a gentleman and be like, can we just get that off our chest?
Yeah.
Like,
no.
Can we start?
Forget about it.
Get tabula rasa now?
Right.
All right, so, I mean, I honestly want to like hockey. I do. And I watch the highlights this year because I know we're going to be talking about more hockey and you're going to be doing a hockey segment every week. And I know Neil watches it. And I want to be into it but it's not the fact that I don't understand. I thought that was like my built-in excuse. Like, I don't understand the intricacies of it. You know, I still could never sit and watch soccer unless it's the World Cup. But because I don't understand anything about that. They just sit around, you know, and I don't know what makes somebody good or bad. I understand watching some guys jump off the screen at you. That guy is much faster, much more athletic than everybody. That defenseman always seems to be in the right spot. That goalie stands on his head. Like, those type of things make me really want to watch the game. But I still don't have that, like, kind of passion for it like you do. And so the Rangers are kind of my de facto team because – when they won the Cup, I'm in high school, surrounded by some hockey fans. So I'm like, oh, I like the Rangers. And so they were the team I would pick, you know, when I'm playing video games, like that type of thing. So, you know, I'm just curious. So you want me to watch, like, a Montreal-Toronto game? Like, what is that going to change about my opinion about hockey? Is it just the intensity of it? Am I going to get that experience on watching on TV?
Well, I think watching, like, Wednesday night rivalries, I mean, obviously we do the show on Wednesday nights, but that's NBC Sportsnet's new deal is trying to make – you know, get like a Chicago-Detroit game or an LA-Anaheim game or something like that. And when you see the built-in animosity, especially if it's two teams that played a knockdown, drag-out playoff series the year before, they're teams that like genuinely want to do harm to one another. And there's a hatred there. There's a beauty to the game. And I've always said, if you like football and you like basketball, hockey is like the perfect confluence of the two in that there's guys trying to take each other's heads off. With the speed and athleticism and everything that you see on a basketball court, like the beauty that you see sometimes in a basketball game, it's there in hockey. It's there when you see a little drop pass. To me and guys like me, it's seeing the coach put like a face-off specialist out there in a spot where you're like, man, why are you putting that guy out there? That's not a defensive zone
draw. It's going to take me so long to get to that. point where I'm understanding it. But I guess I got to just commit to it.
You got
to. That's why I like baseball. I understand that argument against baseball. And the reason I like baseball is because of those type of things.
Right.
Understand the game enough to understand the intricacies of it. But that being said, when you talk about athleticism, first time I saw a live hockey game, you understand. I mean,
oh, yeah.
The insane, I mean, the speed of the game, and these guys, and I don't know if you know, I don't even know how to ice skate.
Oh, yeah, I do.
I don't know how to do it. So when you're watching a guy, like the first thing you're watching is the first like face-off, like, this guy's going to crash. He's going to just run himself into the boards and the way they can stop on the ice and all those things. Even the fact that I've seen probably a half dozen Bridgeport Sounders games, which is a feeder program for the Islanders,
right.
And you watch these guys, and they're all massive guys, and ridiculously athletic guys for the size that they are. I completely appreciate all that. So I think that that's kind of, I can appreciate watching a game. I just can't get into it until it gets later on in the season. And I don't want to be one of those guys like contraction and make the season smaller because I understand the financial aspect of all that. But I think that if the season was shorter and even the playoffs were shorter, you would get a lot more people like me to do it. Granted, we talked about it last week. I don't think it's going to change a thing.
Yeah, you know, the point that I make to some football fans, that because it's obviously a high-speed contact sport and those guys are unbelievable athletes and extremely talented, is the great thing about hockey to me, to really boil it down to brass tacks, is the puck is in play and moving for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
In football, you have, what's the estimate they give you, like 3.5 minutes of the ball actually being in play out of 60?
Yeah.
And in a hockey game, that puck is, when it's out of play, that clock stops. There's no huddle, and boy, the clock's running, they're milking the clock. You get such action, you get less commercials. There's now no longer commercial breaks after icing calls, as to not give the team that iced it any kind of
rest.
So I just think it's a game that's free-flowing, it moves, it's fast, it's physical, there's that brotherhood of scrapping for your teammate, which I love, and there's all those things. So, you know, if you're someone that likes football, I would just say, give hockey a shot for like a week. Just try to watch like 2-3 games in a week and see. Because really, when you get into the intricacies of it, it might be the most interesting.
We both struggled on that, right? We're both smart guys.
We can't even talk.
We both started the word intricacies. We just couldn't say it.
Yeah.
But, no, I don't disagree. So, I mean, for the next week, all right, I'm a regular hockey fan. Like, what am I looking for? There are big games. Like, what are the storylines? I mean, right now, the storyline in my mind is that Brooklyn from San Jose scored 4 goals against the Rangers, right?
Almost hurdle.
Right.
Yep.
You got the Rangers for me as a local fan that you're wondering what's going to go on there. What else is there? I mean, am I just looking for like Sidney Crosby and those type of things? I mean, what am I like? Is there a big game that I'm supposed to be watching? Is there a big matchup coming up?
I can't give you a big matchup per se, but I could say there's 2 undefeated teams left, San Jose and Colorado. San Jose falls apart every year like a cheap suit.
So were they the team that people were high on?
Yeah, a lot of people were high on.
Okay.
They have talent. From the back line to the front line.
Marlowe still playing for them?
Patrick Marlowe does still play for them. So does Big Joe Thornton.
Marlowe.
Yeah, from the NHL 94.
Yeah.
If you remember that. The young Colorado Avalanche being coached by Hall of Fame goaltender Patrick Waugh, who won a few cups there. They're undefeated.
That makes it feel stupid. I know Patrick Waugh very well.
Yeah.
From, you know, just being a casual hockey fan. He's a coach?
He's the first year.
Is that typical for a goalie to be a coach?
There's some goalies out there, but it's not
that
common.
That seems weird to me. How could you, I mean... Seems to me you're a goalie, it'd be difficult to be a student of the game and know all those type of things.
Well, he coached up in the CHL, like major juniors up in Canada, and I believe he coached in minor league hockey here for like Lake Erie or something like that. So he's got some pedigree as a coach. They're undefeated. They're very young. It's kind of a surprise story right now that if you can catch, I don't know if anybody out there gets like NHL, the NHL package. They're an interesting storyline locally. For my Islanders, it's Kyle Okposo has like 1 goal in his last 20. He's skating on one of the top 2 lines every night, and he's doing nothing, and he's just playing like a perimeter player as a big body kid. I'll be interested if he can get known, if they can get any goaltending. And I know a lot of my Devil fan friends are a little ticked off with Coach DeBoer there. He's made Adam Larson, their young defenseman, a healthy scratch. He's got Henry skating with guys that everybody seems to disagree with. He's a young phenom up front. So I think those are some storylines for the local teams. Can all of them get known? Can any of them get
known? I know. What's interesting is, you know, we did our rankings before you joined the show of, like, the 9 New York franchises and who's run the best. And I had the Giants number 1, Devils number 2,
yeah.
Yankees number 3, I believe. But those two, to me, kind of are separate. And you know, the Devils get no pub, even though they're just a fan. They're just always just winning, you know, Stanley Cups and always in it. But I do get that sense from the couple of Devils fans that I know and from people calling into the sports radio talk shows. People are, like, so, like, up in arms about their slow start. And you're like, dude, you know, you're the New Jersey Devils.
I know.
And now all of a sudden, like, have they become the team that just expects to win every year?
That's what
that's
they are.
The prison. I mean, they weren't. That's not a franchise that up until the last 10 years was a dynasty, right? I mean, this is like a newer type thing for them, right?
Well, yeah,
they
started winning in the 90s.
They're not an original six.
They're not an original six. Very good anyway.
I mean, I know my hockey
fans. I think what hockey fans from New Jersey are upset about right now is they're trying to find an answer on the point on the power play. Kovalchuk's playing over in Russia. He opted out of his whole contract, you know, left whatever how many millions he left out there.
A lot of millions.
Yeah, right.
Like tens of millions.
Exactly. And the thing is now, you have Larson, a young defenseman with a good point shot. You're healthy scratching him. You got the kid, Jelena, in the minor leagues, who it's not called up, and the kid shoots the puck like 92 miles an hour. And I think Devils fans are going, all right, listen, we're drawing some power plays because we have some, you know, some foot speed up front, and now we have nobody on the point that can do anything. I think they're sour on DeBoer, the head coach, Peter DeBoer. And it's almost like they want to just boot this guy out of town, kind of like what the Flyers did with Peter Laviolette. I don't see that. I just see a team that maybe has their lines a little bit out of order, maybe even Penn Reef with Elias for one night, maybe trying with another guy if it doesn't work, like Zubris or something like that. But you have all three teams really struggling, and the Rangers, to me, are the ones that are obviously the most surprising because they have the most talent.
The most names.
I mean, they're a team that you look at and you go, on paper, they might not be as good as Pittsburgh. They're not as good as Chicago or San Jose, probably, but, you know, they should be doing a lot more than what they're doing. They can't score. They can't stop anybody from scoring.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think
they're giving up.
I think they had 25 goals given up in five games.
That's pretty insane. Which is, when you have the best goaltender in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's brutal. So I think that's the thing I'm looking at following the local teams, which I love to do, is can any one of them get going? And truthfully, in my mind, I'm looking at it going, right now the Islanders look like the team that might have a shot of getting going faster.
So when's the last time, off the top of your head, that none of the three teams made the playoffs? I know it came close a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's got to be forever, just mainly because of the Devils.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, it's like in my lifetime, of like since 1990 when you start following sports and you can. I mean, there's always somebody in there.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I look at it, and not because I'm an Islanders fan, but I go, they might be the team where you look at it and go, if they can get a little goaltending from the Barkov or Poulin or whatever they're going to, just a little bit, maybe they can get ahead. They don't have the most impossible schedule coming up. Maybe they can get out of the gate and look in their rearview mirror at New Jersey and New York. I don't know. But right now, they're all kind of in disarray. The Rangers are stunning. I really figured right now they'd be sitting, 4-1-1, something along those lines, but they're trying to adjust to the coaching. You know, that's what it is right now. I wasn't sold on that initially, but now I look at it and go, boy, oh boy, they got it.
Yeah, I mean, we did another thing, we did when we talked about, like, which sport does coaching have the most impact. I think baseball by far is the lead. And I said, I don't know. I mean, I put football number one, basketball two, and I said, hockey might be more. I mean, you can let a little more insight. I would assume hockey. Just the rapidness of these line changes and the ice time and all that happens so fast, your mind has to be so much quicker than any of those other guys, with the exception of maybe like an offensive coordinator in football, being able to just, be one or two steps ahead, like the chess match with the defensive coordinator. But, I mean, it does – I mean, you would think that's a huge impact.
I
didn't even get any Joe Schmo off the street that could just sit on the Dodgers dugout and do okay.
Yeah.
You can't just come. I couldn't go sit down on the freaking ice
and
just, like, I would know what's going on.
I would go so far as to put hockey first because I look at it in terms of you got to make the – an offensive coordinator is not necessarily worried about the stamina his right guard has at the current time. It's just kind of taken for granted he's going to play every snap of the game. But when you're trying to get the proper line out there while the puck's moving and the game's moving on, and you're going, my second line should be out there, but I just shifted them one shift ago, maybe there's still a little bit gassed or something like that. The home team getting the final change after a whistle, being able to put the line out there that they want. A lot of times you see a coach put two face-off experts out there so that if one of the guys gets ticked out for trying to get an early jump, they'll have another good face-off guy because face-offs are extremely important.
It's all so
and
quick.
It has to be
no
extremely, extremely fast. And
yeah.
So in that sense, in football you got the three timeouts per half. In hockey you have one for the whole game. So you don't get that chance other than like the rare 60-second commercial break or the intermissions or whatever. to really slow it down and take a look at what you want to do. But there's a lot of line juggling,
Yeah. Doing
your defensive pairs and things like that.
Yeah.
So I would put hockey first, you know. I know I'm biased.
Yeah.
But I would put hockey up there in terms of how fast that coach has to
think. But you know a lot about the four sports, I say. I don't know how much you're a basketball fan, but you know, I know you're a college athlete, but you understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think being relatively, like, you would feel probably most comfortable being a baseball manager.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Second most comfortable probably is basketball then? Third would then be football, and then, well.
I don't even know, dude. I would never put myself out there like our buddy Coach Ironman.
Wow.
I don't know if I can
Nobody
could
do that.
You know what I mean? Because that guy's a genius.
He's stonewalling us, so he can't come on our show. All right. Well, we're actually going to get over to some baseball in a minute. We'll take a quick commercial break. If you do want to call in, the number to call is always 347-637-2306. You could always hit us up on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, or on our the regular website, TriStateSportsGuys.com. We'll be back in a little bit with the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Mike, what is your deal, man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby.
Whoa.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
Mike!
That hurts.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
Hey, we're the Tri-State Sports Guys back with you on a beautiful Wednesday night here, about halfway through the show. We're going to transition over to baseball, which is kind of our bread and butter here. You know, we've got a couple great series going on now. You know, we'll start out in the National League, and I want to get your opinion on something, which I kind of know what your opinion is.
Yeah.
We've been fans of Yasiel Puig since the preseason. I mean, the guy bit 500 in spring training, and kind of went up, was on my radar, and he was a guy who came in as a high-priced, signing, you know, international signing, and he comes in, and he made a splash on the scene, and he's come under some criticism. I know, like, he had some problems with his front office, problems with his coach. Other teams didn't like him. We know all about the jumping in the pool in Arizona. But, you know, in the last couple of days, all everybody's talking about was him big league in that ball that winds up hitting off the fence. And you know my opinion. I had no problem with it.
I know that.
The guy still got a triple out of it. It was a huge hit in the game at the time. He was struggling mightily. I think he was 0 for 11 with 7 Ks at the time. Gozapo,
yep.
You having played baseball, to think you got an apple ball, you have a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I crushed a couple balls to the opposite field that had fallen way short of the warning track. This guy thought he got it. And it goes back to my point we were talking about earlier about, you know, Tony Romo, and I think that you take this away from him, I think it will impact his play on the field. I'm telling you, it impacted Jose Reyes when they tried to take that fire out of his game. And I think that the old traditionalists, like, which I know you are, have a problem with it, and they don't respect the game. But you watch, you know, the World Baseball Classic and the Dominican team and how they celebrated, and they just rolled through the World Baseball Classic. I think that, you know, things change. I think that this is the way of the world now. I don't have any problem with it. So you tell me, you're watching that game.
Yeah.
That ball leaves the bat. He flips the bat. Before you even know if it's out, it probably made you angry.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't go out, you probably giggled.
Curious. I mean, curious.
Now, why does that make you so mad? Honestly, like, just, what, is it just, is it, if you're going to give me the respect for the game thing, that's one thing. Is that what you're going to tell me? Respect the game? It's a game.
I'm going to tell you this.
It's a game.
I'm going to tell you this.
You play for fun. It's an escape. You wrote a beautiful article, 25 Things, Escape from Real Life.
Yeah.
It's an escape from real life. Why does that make you angry? Why does that make you anybody angry?
Because he has 620 homers to hit. 640, excuse me. Just to tie Willie Mays. And Willie Mays never played that way. And you're right, times change. But not always for the better. And that's the point.
That's Willie Mays' hot dog ball.
Willie Mays did everything right. He hustled all the time. Hank Aaron might be the most underrated player in the history of the game. And the guy's got 755 home runs, and you never saw anything like that from him.
But we talked to Ernie Banks. I asked him a direct question. He said people didn't run out balls.
He also said I was awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you want
me to tell
you? What do you want me to tell you, okay? I just, look, do I like watching Flea? Yeah, you know why? Because it's like, what the hell is he going to do today? I don't know what he's going to, you know, he's tossing balls to fans when there's like one out.
Don't you just want your player to play at his best?
Yeah, but you know what, dude? There's a way to play the game.
Why?
Why? Because of all the guys that came before you that made it possible for you to get a, what did he get? $42 million contract? Is that what he got?
Well,
there's
got
guys that paved the way for that.
Yeah.
That didn't play the game that way. There's guys, if you want me to go really
old. Also, Ty Cobb killed a guy and used to sharpen his spike. So there was awful people back in the 20s.
But he's got 4,000 men. Okay?
The Georgia Peach killed a guy.
Yeah, okay. But there's a proper way to play the game.
Yeah.
There are guys that...
They also used to just drop N-bombs at Jack Robinson. Let's not act like these guys were saints.
No. Back then. I'm not saying that they were
saints. That's the way to play the game?
I'm not.
That's the way to play the game?
No.
To yell from the crowd, to yell from your dugout?
No. It's not. But what my point was, if you let me make my point, there were guys that fought in wars and disrupted their playing careers. Those guys were making like 10 grand a year.
Yeah.
Like a Bob Feller or a Joe DiMaggio or a Hank Greenberg. That fought in wars and interrupted their playing careers so that these guys could run around like buffoons now?
Why is that making him a buffoon now? Like, I don't understand.
Why? Because he's one of the most talented players in the world. It's like all 750 or whatever are big league players are some of the most talented,
yeah,
if you take into account.
I can tell why he's top 15 position player.
I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to argue that. It just bothers me, and I look at it like this. A guy like Mike Trout has to be in that top 15. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And
he's got a great neck.
Just puts his nose down.
Yeah.
How do you get those traps, by the way?
Ask Frank Lionone.
But, I mean, you know, look, I'm not sitting here saying that it stopped me from watching the game. And
it makes you angry, though.
I like me.
But I'm saying that it makes you – I never get that sense. Like, I get there's some things that make me angry.
Like, what makes you angry on a baseball field?
I'd say on a baseball field, what makes me very angry –
curveballs outside corner?
No, I get really angry at mostly – pitchers that bitch when a guy makes an error more than anything in the world.
Yeah.
Matt Latos, the king of it, guy makes an error, he throws his hands up in the air.
You're showing
that,
up the team.
That makes me angry.
What about, and you already said, you know, you don't want me to get into it, what about showing up the game?
I don't even know what that means.
You
I just don't know what that, I don't know what showing up the game means.
It means,
the game.
It means explaining something to your son, your daughter, taking them to a ball game. Like, you take your daughter.
Yeah.
In a couple of years, you take her to her first ball game.
Yeah.
And maybe she gets into softball, maybe she becomes a musician, whatever she wants to do, but she wants to go, Daddy, why does Yasiel Puig play like a clown? And you have to explain to her, honey, that's just the way the world is.
Yeah.
People can clown around and do whatever they want as long as they're talented.
It's a 15-second conversation.
And that's it?
Yeah.
Not like, listen, dear, I want to explain to you, okay, that's what he does because he's really good. Here's what guys like Daddy and Uncle Dan do.
I think, you know what you do? You contrast that with a guy like Jordani Valdespin, and who does the same antics and hits 180, and you say, you know what? If you're going to do that kind of stuff, you better be very, very good.
Okay.
You better be very, all very right. good. I just like to live in reality.
Yeah.
In that I don't think, and I would tell her, I think that when people talk about, like, what would Mickey Mantle have been if he wasn't a boomtown going around doing all these things? I think there's a just as good enough chance he would have been a worse player because he needed that release and all that. And so I think that Yasiel Puig, if he didn't have that crazy edge and that emotion that he plays with the game and flip the bat and all that, I think he might not have been. I think like a guy like Juan Uribe, who does nothing in the regular season but consistently does very well in the playoffs, it's because he plays with that kind of passion and he's got that ridiculous confidence. When he's just this fat guy who has no business being very good at baseball, but he's got this, you know, huge swing, and you're like, if you're a coach, you're looking at Juan Uribe, like, this guy does not have a major league swing. The hitches that he's got and swinging through his shoes, but in a big spot, he's got more confidence in the world, and I think that adds to it. So I think Yasiel Puig doesn't know how to play the game any other way, and there's no way to change that. So I think that's what I tell my daughter, that, like, you know, everybody's got to get to their, you know, we talk about breaking down a baseball swing. How do you get to your spot? Eric Davis held his hands down here. You know, Julio Franco hands down here. At the end of the day, you got to get to the same spot. You got to drive the ball. And it's the same way mentally. Different people get to spots. I mean, nobody prepares better than like a Joey Votto. Quiet hands, never hits the ball down the right field line, never hits the ball in foul territory. And he gets to the playoffs and he stinks every year.
Well,
maybe he needs to have a little bit more Yasiel Puig.
Number one, just to make a point, Mickey Mantle had a degenerative condition in his family. He thought he was going to be dead by 40.
Yeah.
He drank himself to death. He had the knee injury because Joe D didn't know how to let a young kid catch a ball in right center field in Yankee Stadium. And what Mickey Mantle did, if you talk to people in our parents' generation, he showed up to work every day, put his head down, ran out his balls, did what he could, knobby knees, the whole friggin' deal, played as hard as he could, okay? He didn't embarrass anybody. You don't want to know why he didn't embarrass anybody? Because he was wearing a felt cap to the plate for half his career. And he'd get a ball in his temple, and it would kill him. Now, meanwhile, last night, Puig gets a ball underneath his chin from Lance Lynn, and he doesn't understand why. Now, whether Lynn did that on purpose or not, neither one of us knows. But he now wants to showboat and run around, and that, I guess I'm getting to my own conclusion here. That's my problem.
Well, then let the guys handle it.
I said it forever. I said it 2 weeks ago. Let them throw at everybody.
Well, I agree with you there.
Because I guarantee
but that's my problem.
They'll slow down.
Well, then that's
either that or be in the hospital.
Or if it pisses his teammates off or his coaches off, let him handle it. But as, like, fans, I don't understand the concept of, like, the respect of the game, and that makes, like, none of that ever makes me angry. I guess I'm looking at this guy in a big spot, the guy hit a triple.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, I guess a lot of it comes back to the fact that, you know, my dad taught me the game.
My dad did, too. I only played baseball growing up. Didn't play soccer. I didn't play football. I didn't play basketball.
Right.
I love baseball more than any sport, any hobby, anything more than, like, my family in the world. I love baseball.
But my dad killed on that stuff all the time. And maybe that's the difference. I'm sure your dad knows the game.
My dad did, too.
You know what I mean? But that's in me where I go.
But I got a little heart cutting into me. You know, with dad. You know what the funny thing is?
So you're just lashing out against your dad.
You know what, Dad? I'm staying up past 11 and watching the Monday night, whatever you're talking about, college basketball. You know what's funny to me? So you get these people that want to criticize like you do, which is fine.
Right.
So obviously the last couple of days on Facebook, you get all these people with their opinions about Yasiel Puig. Guys I play baseball with, guys I play softball with, guys I grew up with, everybody has an opinion. The craziest argument I heard was I went on defending Yasiel Puig, and somebody said, Mike, how annoyed do you get when you're playing slow pitch softball and you get those guys that go, oh, every time they hit the ball? And I just took a step back. I wanted, before I want to throw my laptop through the wall,
of course,
you're going to compare your fat ass playing slow pitch softball to somebody playing in the National League Championship Series.
Yeah.
That's the end of the argument.
Right.
You want to compare what you do. The idiots that do that to slow pitch softball are jackasses.
Yeah.
Because those guys are better than nobody. They're hitting a ball throwing underhand. This guy just took a pitch 3 inches off the end of the plate in a big spot and hit it off the top of the fence.
Yeah. You know my thing I said for years? I played hardball with you. Good player. Whole deal. Played softball with you. Never saw you do that. I don't do that.
I don't do it. That's what I'm saying.
You know what they all have in common? They stunk at hardball. Every single one of them, if they listen to our show, they know that Dan Santarola said, I probably played hardball against you, and you stunk.
And you were much better. I agree with
that's
that.
What it
you
is.
Know, see, we play with, you know, Pete Tucci, who's one of the sponsors of our show.
Just hustles.
This guy runs faster than anybody.
Absolutely.
Never. And if he hits the ball at the middle, he's, like, apologizing to people.
Yeah.
He's that guy. The guy, the idiots, the fat slob that hit balls at the middle and right at the pitcher and want to talk trash. Like, I remember you.
So many
you
names.
You got cut from JV.
So many names are flooding my mind.
Oh, I know. We're not going to
say anything.
Because we're gentlemen. You know what we're going to do to break the tension? Because there's tension now.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the
more
phone
hockey
line.
Talk.
You want to add to the tension? We're going to go to the phone line. We're going to go out to your favorite call.
Let me guess. Matt from Norwalk.
Hey, how are you guys?
Natty, how you
Matthew?
Doing, brother?
You're sounding good. I'm getting attacked by a 2-year-old. Okay, KJ, hold on one second. Listen, you guys are sounding good. I think that this is a revolutionary show tonight because I kind of agree with Dan.
What?
I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm a New York Giants fan and I'm a New York Yankees fan. And if the Giants haven't won the Super Bowl in 99 years, but the Yankees win it every year, I still want to see the Yankees win it. I mean, that's how much I love baseball more than football. And so you can't help but being sort of a baseball purist, and I understand what you mean by disrespecting the game. I just think that when you talk about guys from the 50s and the 40s, that the game was, and the culture was just a lot different, meaning in the sense that people – you know, carry themselves different, and we've become much more of a, we have a lot of different people and a lot of different origins playing baseball. So I guess, you know, what we would consider as being something that is being respecting the game other people won it, but doesn't necessarily mean that any of us are wrong, right?
Well, I mean, I agree with you to an extent, Maddie, but I mean, none of us were around back then, so we don't know, you know, day in and day out whether guys were hustling, whether guys were big league and played, and I'm sure they were, and that's part of my question to Ernie, whether we got the right answer or not out of them, and it was like, this has probably always been part of the game. Anytime you get a group of men playing a sport, I think it's just human nature to do to trash talk. We trash talk when we play poker for $20 in my basement. We do that. It's like what men do. And there's, and if I'm playing wiffle ball in my backyard and these fat guys are playing softball, it's part of what it is. And you get to that level, I agree. It should piss the other team off. If my opponent did that, of course I'd be mad. And like Dan said, you should be able to throw at him. But as a fan, I'm watching this game like this guy came with a big hit. And if that's what this guy needs to do to motivate himself, that's what he's got to do.
Yeah. But Mike, one thing I want to say when you talk about a Mickey Mantle, and you talk, I'll even bring this out into a further thing. When you talk about like a guy like, you know, like a John F. Kennedy, for example, and I know that you're thinking about two different spectrums there, but let me compare the two. What I'm saying is that these people were protected by the media. They were protected by the media. The stuff that John F. Kennedy did, you know, in his social life would never, ever, ever stand for a media of today. And, you know, now you have bloggers and you have, you know, a different type of gotcha type of media. And Mickey Mantle fell into that same thing, too. You know, I mean, Derek Jeter could never live a life that Mickey Mantle lived and still get away with it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there, Matty. But that's why I think it's impossible to compare eras. Well, Matt, we got a guest on hold here, so I got to get to him. But thanks for calling. I hope you keep listening there. It's a great Matty from Norwalk. But we like to debate Hall of Fame talk all the time.
Love it.
Danny wants about 11 people total in the Hall of Fame.
It's closer to nine.
Closer to nine. We are being joined now by a guy who knows a little bit about sports. The guy who's a producer on Mad Dog Radio. I would put his baseball knowledge, and I'd put his basketball knowledge. I mean, this guy knows a lot about sports. I want to ask him to join. I've been wanting to get him on the show for a while. He's joining us all the way from Florida on line number one on the Tucci Lumber Hotline. We got DJ Zulo. DJ, are you with us, brother?
Gentlemen, what's going on? Happy to be here. How are you?
I'm happy to have you, buddy. So, you know, we haven't gotten to yet, but, I mean, the debate that has been raging on our Facebook page and raging on your Facebook page, I mean, you posted something. You had like 250 comments. I had to stop reading it. But it's the debate over Carlos Beltran and whether this guy is a Hall of Famer and whether the playoff numbers he's put up puts him over the edge. And my simple statement on my Facebook page was, if you're one of those guys who thinks Eli Manning is going to walk into the Hall of Fame, how are you not a pro Carlos Beltran fan, because he's doing things in the postseason that nobody's done, and he's doing it year after year. He didn't have one great postseason. He does it all the time. And the Met fans that want to remember his one strikeout on a filthy slider and forget about the fact that he had three home runs in that series and he hit over 300 really just either didn't watch the games or just are ignorant to what's going on. So, Deej, I mean, give me your case. I know you're a pro Beltran guy. You're a pro Beltran guy going into this series, and this has just solidified your argument, right?
It has. You know, I know Dan is what you would call a small room guy when referring to the Hall of Fame. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum, so we may butt heads a little bit. I'm a big room guy. I think, you know, I consider the Hall of Fame to be a museum, first and foremost, and I think that it should be well represented, not by just the immortals, but by all the great players that have played the game. And I think that Carlos Beltran, even if you didn't even factor in the postseason, which has been phenomenal and arguably one of the best in baseball history, he's a Hall of Famer if you don't even factor that in. The guy, if you want to just put stats aside and you want to talk about his ability to do everything you would want a baseball player to do on the field, he's a prototypical 5-tool player. His numbers are phenomenal. His postseason success, I think, for the Hall of Fame voters will put him over the top. For me, he's a Hall of Famer, first ballot, no doubt, or before you even bring up the postseason. This is just the cherry on top of the sundae. He's my favorite player of all time before he became a Met. And I think that what he does on the baseball field is very difficult to do. And I think that it gets by the Met fans that talk about that one pitch that Wainwright threw, and you mentioned how filthy that was. I wish we don't even discuss that, because it gives what I can consider dumb, idiotic Met fans the time of the day. We shouldn't even discuss that, because what the guy did for the Mets was phenomenal. You call him the best free agent signing in the history of the Mets, and that's true. You know, to me, Beltran is the first ballot Hall of Famer. His numbers stack up to players in the Hall of Fame. He stacks up to players that we view as Hall of Famers that aren't in. To me, first ballot, and I don't even care about the postseason. That just is for the voters that are going to end up using that as part of their argument.
Well, I mean, you know, DJ, I think it's interesting what you say when you say he's a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. You know what I mean? To me, you can call it a small group guy, whatever you want. That's fine. Guys like Willie Mays, guys like Hank Aaron, Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, those guys are first ballot Hall of Famers. A guy like Andre Dawson, they kept out for, what, 20 years? 20 years he was a five-tool player. Even when his knees went on him, he was a five-tool player, and they kept him out. You know what I mean? And then you get a guy like Bill Mazeroski. He's in the Hall of Fame because he hit one big home run in 1960. His career, he doesn't even deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. But he's in because he hit one big homer. So I guess I disagree with you in one sense. But on the other hand, I say, you know, if they have Mazeroski in for hitting one homer, then Beltran, who rips it up in the postseason, I don't know. I mean, to me, he's not a surefire Hall of Famer, let alone a first ballot Hall of Famer. I understand all of the points you're making.
Yeah.
But I just think, like I said, I think first ballot is reserved for the guys where you just go, there's no question. I mean, no one can question Willie Mays. People can question Belka. They can question him because he's in that Andre Dawson, Jim Rice type player mold, you know what I mean, where he's not a 4, 5, 6 home run guy, right? Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that if you want to tier Hall of Famers and say that you have the immortals, you have the legends, you have the solid Hall of Famer, then you have the borderline guy. And I think that Andre Dawson does fall into that cusp borderline player. I think there are a lot of players like that. Bill Mazeroski, he was a Veterans Committee guy. I don't even think he's worth mentioning as part of the debate here because, you know, he was voted in by his buddies, basically. He doesn't deserve to be there. But I think a guy like Andre Dawson does deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think it's only reserved for the immortals or the legends. And I think that if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer year one or year 10. I don't get that we should almost punish a player because he wasn't great enough. If he's a Hall of Famer and you think that he may have to wait 5 years, I don't get that argument. I mean, you know, what if he something tragic happens and he's not alive to see himself get put in the Hall of Fame? If he's a Hall of Famer, put him in day one. To me, that shouldn't be reserved only for the legends, for the Willie Mayses and or for the Ted Williams. And I get the theory behind it, and you want to separate Beltran with Willie Mays, and they're on different tiers, absolutely. But if he's a Hall of Famer in year 10, put him in year one. Why make him wait the 10 years or the 9 years or the 5 years? Because it's almost you're almost kind of setting yourself up to, like, accept it better. I can accept him year 10, but year one I can't. To me, I don't understand that because the end result, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Deej, this is Mike again. I think that all the time, and we saw a couple of the voters last year gave their ballots, and they were jokes. I mean, there were guys on their ballots that were jokes because they don't think, I don't vote for anybody on the first ballot because, you know, Tom Seaver didn't get 100% of the vote, and Babe Ruth, like, that's just insane to me. If a guy's a Hall of Famer, you vote for him for the Hall of Fame. The idea
right.
that, like, if I'm a voter, I'm going to just pause on it because of, and I like the idea of, like, this guy got it on the first ballot, and that should be separate. But if I think the guy's a Hall of Famer, the guy's a Hall of Famer. My idea of him is not going to change another year out. Like, you know what, I thought about it a little more, and now all of a sudden I'm going to vote for him. That's my problem is these voters that are just high and mighty and are like, so-and-so didn't get in on the first ballot, so I can never vote for this guy on the first ballot and so-and-so. If the guy's a Hall of Famer, your job is to vote. Here's the list of people who are eligible. Well, vote for who you think is eligible and vote for who you think should be in the Hall of Fame. I can't agree with you more than that. And that's one of the things that frustrates me about it. And that doesn't make me a big room guy or a small room guy. It's just like whatever your criteria is, the criteria should be the same whether it's your first year or your fifth year.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. Now, there is a scenario where I think that it is within the, you know, they can do what they're going to do what they want, the writers. You said they are, a lot of them are high and mighty. And I think there is a situation where it may benefit them by waiting. And then these are the guys that have a lot of the steroid discussion behind them. And while I don't agree with that theory, to me, a guy like Jeff Bagwell is a Hall of Famer. Mike Piazza is a Hall of Famer. I would have voted them in day one. But if you're going to say, listen, I want to wait 5, 10 years because I don't know if something else isn't going to come up where it's going to link Bagwell or Piazza or Biggio and link them directly to steroids because I'm not putting a steroid user in, then I understand the argument. The argument I don't understand is the one that you just discussed where I'm not going to vote him in because Willie Mays is the only guy I'm putting in on the first ballot or Ted Williams. I don't buy that, but I can understand the writer who's a little concerned about putting a guy in that eventually 5 years, 10 years down the line, we're going to link to steroids all of a sudden. That to me is a valid debate, although one I don't subscribe to because I'm putting those guys in regardless.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make 2 points there. But I think that the other one is, I don't necessarily think, I mean, I think the writers can be seedy, and I think there's a vetting process that I don't agree with. But I don't necessarily think that they're sitting there saying we're going to keep Dawson out for 20 years as much as they look at it like the vast majority of them voted for Robin Yount 1 year, or they voted for Kirby Puckett the next year, or Dave Winfield the following year, guys that they felt were better players than him. You know what I mean? So there are guys, and I agree with you, just to go back on the Mazarasi thing, I think guys like him and Reese and Rizzuto that really don't have that much of a place in the Hall of Fame. But I also don't like the idea on your other point about a guy like Piazza, when there are question marks swirling around certain players because their heads got big really fast or whatever. That I don't, and I know Mike doesn't always agree with me on this, but I don't want to see their plaque next to Mays or Aaron or Frank Robinson or, you know, George Sisler or somebody like that. You know, that just bothers me, and it's a very subjective argument, and that's the way I look at it. You know, I'm a small room guy, DJ.
No, and you know, I do respect that, and believe me, I spent years working for SiriusXM, and we're talking about that because a guy like Chris Russo is a, what you consider a small room guy, and he'll bring out his 500-page baseball almanac because the guy can't use a computer still, and he'll go through and he'll pick out, oh, this was a Hall of Fame year, but this wasn't, and in his Hall of Fame, he would have 10, 20 guys. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum because, again, as I mentioned, I don't view the Hall of Fame as, I don't know, sanctimonious as some do. And to me, that there are a lot of great players that unfortunately are being peppered with questions about their ability and when they were actually great players. Andre Dawson was a great baseball player. His knees gave out on him. I understand that, and his numbers kind of suffered for that. But you want to talk about a guy that could do everything on a baseball field. His numbers don't cumulatively add up to a lot of the players in. But he was the most feared defensive player, arguably, of his generation. He can do everything on the field. Beltran is in a similar category, all-around great baseball player. Those are the type of players I want in the Hall of Fame. And guys where I think that are picked apart because their totals, their home run totals, or their batting average, or their RBI maybe don't stack up to the guys like Willie Mays because we're unfairly comparing them to those players. They're never gonna stack up to those guys. But that doesn't mean they don't belong in the same room as them.
Yeah, I'm with you, DJ. It's Mike again. I mean,
yeah.
I agree with you to an extent about the idea that this is a museum, which is why, I mean, if they're really going to keep these steroid guys out and Barry Bonds is going to go the next, you know, 5-10 years without getting in the Hall of Fame, it's going to be insane because if I'm taking my kids to this Hall of Fame, and I'm going to say, well, the guy who's the all-time leader in home runs isn't in, the guy that is the all-time leader in hits is not in this thing, diminish what this purpose of the Hall of Fame is, especially the best baseball players of all time, in my opinion. And so you get to a guy like, you know, I think everybody's got their own story. So if you look at, you know, the bronze plaque of Carlos Beltran, you say, well, this is a guy, you know, when all is said and done, is going to have 380, 390 home runs in the regular season, be one of the best defensive center fielders in his generation, and in the playoffs put up numbers that we've never seen before. And that's his argument there. And so, you know, I think that – There's a definite story there. It's not just a one-hit wonder type of thing. The guy's got probably not enough on his regular season numbers to get in, but borderline numbers to get in when you also consider what he was defensively. And then you look at his postseason numbers, and they're insane. He's got an OPS over 1,000. And you say, yeah, this is why he's in there, and you can make that argument. And so I want to take my kids there and say this is why he's in there.
And it's not dissimilar to a guy like David Ortiz who – his postseason maybe isn't as his numbers don't stack up in terms of the raw average as Beltran, but his moments are indelible. The other night was just another case. Now he's more of a unique situation because as a DH, those are the toughest guys I think you guys would both agree to judge because how are you factoring in the lack of defensive value? You know, it's interesting that you know guys that played the outfield or the infield badly aren't hurt by it, but guys who didn't play defense at all and were an absolute, you know, didn't hurt or affect your team in a positive way, they're almost hurt a little more. But you know, where do you guys stand on a player like Ortiz, who's had probably a 6-7 year peak that can stack up against most players in the Hall of Fame? But as a DH, you know, how do you factor that in?
Well, I'm 100% with you because you know what? If David Ortiz played in the 1950s and 60s, he would have been a bad defensive first baseman who put up gaudy numbers. And I think
he would have been Ralph Kiner. And Ralph Kiner, if you listen, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but he's considered to be a butcher in defensively, but he played defense because that he had to do it, so he doesn't get hurt by the fact that the option of a DH was there.
Exactly. So that's why I think like guys like Jim Thome, even Edgar Martinez, it's like they shouldn't be penalized just because they play in an era where the DH is impossible, because it's not like these guys would be out of the league if it wasn't there. And so the league made the rule change in the 70s where they were going to allow DHs, and they're DHs, and they do it very well. And the reason I think David Ortiz has got to be in there is because – and it's very simple. Anybody watching that game the other night, when you start doing the math and, oh, my God, they load the bases and David Ortiz comes up, there's a chance. There's not maybe a handful of guys over the last generation where you're like, yeah, if the bases are loaded and you're down four runs, this guy's going to hit a home run. And everybody, and I'm a guy, and Dan will make fun of me, I'm doing actually a postseason fantasy playoff league, and I really needed that win out of Scherzer, and I really need Detroit. But even in that moment as a baseball fan, I'm like, this is going to be awesome. David Ortiz is going to hit a home run, and he did it on the first pitch. And that just shows you, this guy is like, he's just different than other players in that spot. And it started with the 0-4, run that they made against the Yankees. He had big hit after big hit. And that's why I think, and I'm Dan, you're breathing so heavy, so I'm going to pass the mic to you. You disagree with me. But when he came up to bat, were you not thinking, yeah, David Ortiz is probably going to hit a home run here?
Well, first of all, did he not admit that he used BBs? After he said that
he didn't admit to it,
did he not get caught on that? What's it called?
He got caught on that. This is my problem with that list. The players' union only agreed to it that it was going to be confidential.
Right, and then they
all of a sudden,
here and there.
Which is BS.
It's awful. Absolutely,
it's awful. So we don't know the testing procedures that went on. There was no appeal process. We don't know. I mean, I could test positive tomorrow for something to be fine with it.
The argument you two seem to agree on.
You want to make the PED argument and say he's not in, then that's a different argument. Say he didn't do PEDs. You're telling me he's not a Hall of Famer?
In my opinion?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody that just DHs for his entire career, ever.
So that's the kiss of death.
Because
once a guy switches to DH.
Well, here's the thing. You guys make the argument about Ralph Kiner. Okay, I heard DJ make the argument about Ralph Kiner. Okay, and what people don't make is Hank Greenberg was a first baseman. The Tigers in 1935 or 6 pick up Rudy York, who was another defensive liability, and they moved Greenberg to the outfield. And he went and played the outfield, and he wasn't good. And Charlie Gehringer actually told newspaper writers, this guy's a clown, but he hits 40 home runs a year and he does what he has to do. He plays the whole game. He's not extra rested when he comes up.
If you're a DH, it's hard to DH. I can't DH.
If you're tired DHing, then you probably
it's hard to say in the game. It's not about being tired.
No, I understand that.
It's very hard. To me, DHing is the worst thing in the world. I'm DH.
Well, he makes $15 million a year. He'll be fine.
I'm just saying competitive life is very hard.
No, you got to play the whole game. You have to play both.
I think it's easier to play the whole game. I think it's easier to hit when you play the whole game.
Even if you're a defensive liability, you should have to play both sides of the game. I hate the DH. I've hated it since I was a kid, I think.
I hate it, too, but it's the reality, dude. I live in the real world, dude. I don't live in this, euphoric world where, it doesn't exist. It exists, and we all have to deal with it.
It absolutely exists, but it doesn't mean that if I had a Hall of Fame vote, I should vote for a player like that gets to sit on his ass after the game while his teammates are out.
How do you know how bad it is? He could be fine. I mean,
how do I know? Because
he's not awful. I've seen him play first base. Jim Thome wasn't awful at first base. He wasn't atrocious. He wasn't Mike Piazza when he went out there.
Where? At first?
Yeah, when Mike Piazza was at first base, Mike Piazza was atrocious. When Daniel Murphy goes to the outfield, he was atrocious. Like, there's guys that can't do it. I didn't see that out of Jim Thome or Edgar Martinez when he was stuck in the field, or David Ortiz. They're not like, okay, we can't win a game because David Ortiz is playing first base and they're playing an early play.
Well, I mean,
he seems to do all right.
If you think, or either one of you thinks, that over 162 games, it's not some kind of a rested advantage to be DHing, I've made that argument about PEDs for years. People go, it might not help your eyesight. It might not help you hit the ball further or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, you're out there playing in the field. You're out there playing in the field from April through September, getting tired for 154 games back then.
Well, anybody that took Grady's back in the 70s and 80s should be in all of
them. I would get rid of everybody. I would get rid of absolutely everybody. But if you think
guys
like Ortiz or Edgar Martinez should win an MVP award for just hitting, I feel really bad for the Hall of Fame if people start thinking that way.
We're not talking about MVP. I think it'd be to make. I'm saying you said MVP.
You're going to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So why not make him eligible just to win MVPs if he bats 350?
Because if he does it every year, he gets in the Hall of Fame.
That's terrible.
DJ, can you just, before you hang up, can you just tell me that I'm right?
This is De Palma talking?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, you're right, buddy.
All right, well, DJ, I really appreciate you taking the time on a Wednesday to call in. I mean, you got any closing thoughts, brother?
No, I mean, these are, whether we're going to put them in the Hall of Fame or not, you know, they're special players, and I think it's pretty cool now that we can actually talk about the Hall of Fame of players we've seen. I don't know, I think we're all around the same age. You know, we're talking about players in the 70s and 80s. It's a little hard because we didn't really grow up watching them. But now we're talking about players that we actually viewed. So I think the debates now, that's why they're getting so heated, because we've seen these players, and I think that we have a little more of an emotional attachment to them, I think. So it's pretty cool that way.
I agree with you. Now I'm agreeing with you on this topic, and Dan is shaking his head. I'd love to have you on again, whether it's next week or another time, because you had a Facebook post today about throwing out wins as a category. That is a discussion for another day, DJ, and I would love to debate you on some of these crazy baseball stats, brother.
All right, brother. You fellas, be good. Have a good night.
All right, thank you, DJ Zulo, for Mad Dog Radio. We do have a couple callers on hold, but we do have a special guest. If you are on hold, please stick with us, because we have a special guest calling in on the Tucci Lumber Hotline. He's an important guy for the Tri-State Sports guys. I mean, you have one of those guys that, like, you know, he's like the foundation. We call him the fifth Beatle.
Yeah.
He is the great. I mean, we're going to call him, O from New Canaan now. He's a big-timer. He lives in a house bigger than the town of Darien, probably. So we're going to go out to New Canaan and bring on O from New Canaan. O, are you with us, brother?
What's going on, guys?
Did you hear that debate? I mean, who won that debate, dude? Can you be the judge, jury,
and
executioner?
Listen, I got a lot of respect for Santa's baseball knowledge, but the idea that you're not going to put someone in when it's an actual position, that just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, no DH is ever going to get in, then why is there a DH? So why are punters in? Why are kickers in? I mean, they're specialized positions.
I love you, man. And the basis of my argument was the fact that if I had a vote, I would never vote for somebody that DHs in entire career. If you want to talk about Paul Molitor, if you want to talk about Edgar and Poppy, then no, I never would. And that's the great thing about baseball in America, is I have the right to that opinion. I would never vote for a guy that all he does is hit.
America allows you to be wrong and still have a voice.
But then you're just saying that you're not evolving with the game. I mean, the game also has, Colorado. That means you'll never allow a guy in Colorado. You'll never allow a DH.
Oh, he won't.
You'll never allow a pitcher who's in a pitching park. I mean, at some point you have to adjust to what's going on.
Exactly. We brought you on because last week we had a very good debate. It was about coaching decisions in the playoffs. And there's been some interesting coaching decisions.
Awful.
And now, you just think every baseball manager is horrible. We know, I've known that from when we had you as the show as a co-host. I know you outside of the show. You hate it. And you actually told me the other day via text that you thought Jim Leland had completely lost it. Like, this guy, one of the best managers in the last 30 or 40 years, now just doesn't know the game of baseball, apparently. So you
I'm sure.
You think Jim Leland... Now, what decisions has he made? I mean, everybody wants to kill him for the fact he can't go to his closer to get a four-game save, and you want him to go to Phil Koch, who's in the minor leagues at some point this year. You want to debate the fact that he shouldn't have been on the roster? That's a different thing. I don't think Phil Koch should have been even on the roster at the point.
But that's my point.
Go to your closer to get a four-out save when you're up four runs, then you have no chance of winning, and you can't rely on your closer to do that.
But, see, that's my point. Now, I'll grant you this. Okay, I'll answer the closer thing first, and then I'll talk about Leland. If you are going to put him on the roster, the manager decides who's on the roster. So if you're going to put a guy like that on the roster, what else is he on your team for except for that moment when the previous day your closer had an intense 22 or 23 pitch outing to get you out of a game? So here's a guy who threw yesterday in a pressure situation. You have a lead. So in theory, you have this lefty who hasn't pitched a lot. You decided to put him on a roster. Now you're saying to yourself, well, maybe he fails. But, there's a very small percent chance that the guy's going to hit home run, of course. But if you have a lefty, why is he on your team if you're not bringing him in to face that guy? Then put someone else on your team.
You need an arm just to give you innings at some point. If you get a blowout,
okay,
you need
so then
that
the very
arm
next
in there.
Day,
in a press
so then last...
situation, you have a guy that was so bad this year that they sent him to the minor league. You're going to have your season on the line, or do you want to have your season on the line with a close?
Okay.
Come on.
So then last game, when it's 1-0 game in a ninth inning, who does he bring in to face Ortiz but Coke? Why is that? Now all of a sudden he's got super confidence
in him? Because you just said Benoit just missed 2 days in a row.
But that's the point. The guy, you needed one out. Oh, and you got a guy, and one thing that can hurt you is a home run there. I mean, everything else is damaging, but you got to keep the ball in the ballpark, and you know Ortiz has better numbers against Benoit than the other guy. Now, granted, you know, neither of them are great, and the guy hadn't given up a home run to a lefty, and then he throws a first-pitch fastball. That's not Leland's fault, but I don't think he put his team in position to succeed there.
I think that
if he did, then he probably would have brought Benoit in earlier, but he probably knew the guy couldn't get that many outs, so why not bring in Coke there? You're playing shorthanded if you're not willing to use every guy in those situations. Especially a specialist reliever like that, if you're not willing to bring him in against the lefty, the most important lefty, then he shouldn't be on your roster.
Oh, you know, I want to ask you about something a little bit different. And just a couple weeks ago, I told Mike that the two guys in the world I think know the most about baseball in this order are Ron Gardenhire and you. Okay, so I'm prefacing it by
saying
that.
You're mocking me. Now you're mocking me.
No, he did tell me that, Al. That's BS.
I want to know your thoughts, because I know you coach kids and all that stuff. What are your thoughts? Because I got into with Mike a little bit about Clint Hurdle putting on a squeeze play with Russell Martin. Are you a proponent of the squeeze play? Do you teach it? Do you like it in that spot with Russell Martin? Did you see that game?
I do teach it, but only, I mean, I like that in a situation where you frankly just don't feel you have another choice. And you feel like, you know, or if my team is already winning and it's just worth a gamble and, you know, the other team's sleeping. I don't like it in big situations at all. I think it's a crazy play. And it's so many – like, if you think about all the scenarios that could happen, only one of them is positive, and everything else is literally suicide. That's why they call it that. You know, and then when you have guys like Russell Martin who can actually play, like, what are we doing?
He's been hitting missiles in that series. He hit the two balls in the seats and everything else he'd done, and then he's putting on a squeeze play with him. It made me throw up.
Yeah, and here's the other thing I don't understand. So you're watching this Red Sox-Tigers series, and neither team can score. I see the stat today. The Red Sox are 8-for-80 against the starting pitchers. The game's 1-0 in the ninth inning. The guy in the Red Sox gets a leadoff double. The number 9 hitter's up. Jacoby Ellsbury's on deck, and he doesn't bunt the guy. Now, you explain to me in a ninth inning up 1-0 when one more run can feel like 6, why that guy wouldn't bunt.
I don't have an answer.
He's a nine hitter.
I mean, I really don't. I subscribe to that old school way of playing and bunting runners over and doing all that stuff. And you know what? The more American League baseball I watch, the more confused I get about what the hell I even know. You know what I mean? Like I watch National League games and I was like, oh, okay, there's a sacrifice bunt with my leadoff hitter to get a guy over, or you know, whatever the case might be. I don't understand American League baseball the more I watch of it. So I agree with you 100% there, buddy.
I'm a proponent of bunting too. I think that there's not enough bunting. In general, I agree with the bump, but there also is a school of thought that goes in the face of that. It's like you should never give up outs. So,
well, you should never give up outs.
I don't think so. Doesn't mean that managers don't know what they're doing, and I think that's my problem with your argument. Is that you just think
what
they're doing.
I think in general, the problem with major league managers, a lot of them, is that they are so focused on the long run, and it's a 162-game season, that when they get in these big games that big fans like us three are watching, and we're thinking about every scenario, they're so conditioned to think long term. I mean, here another point, this is my thing about Leland. Now, he actually made the change today for the first time all year, because I've had this guy on my team. Austin Jackson never walks. He never walks unless the guy throws around him like they did today. He never walks. He doesn't steal bases, and he's 3-for-33. So why is he hitting leadoff? When your best hitter can't even produce, so now you even need more base runners to make something happen. Why does this guy continue to hit leadoff? Because over time in a season, maybe he's a productive hitter. But when a guy is struggling like that and he doesn't steal bases, why is he your leadoff hitter? That's my problem. These guys, and I think that's why Gardenhire is a little better, is he's consistently finding new ways, like Santa said, to make runs because he knows that his team's maybe a little undermanned. These guys with good teams like a Mattingly, who you know I hate, these guys are just so used to, like, let's just let it play out and see what happens, and they never do anything. Don Mattingly brought D. Gordon in the pinch run for Adrian Gonzalez and didn't steal him. And then what happened? Adrian Gonzalez's spot came up a couple of innings later. Why would you pinch run a guy if he's not going to steal? What's the point?
Yeah, well, I agree that Don Mattingly stinks. And just as an aside, if you're listening to us live, we're going to go into bonus time, so you got to download the rest of the show, as always, on TriCitySportsGuys.com. Follow us at @TriCity_sports, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TriCitySportsGuys. But, I mean, I agree with you there. I mean, you know, with, like, Austin Jackson, he's been really struggling. But if you remember when a few years ago when Joe Torre dropped A-Rod to eighth, everybody's like, that's a panic move and blah, 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 and everybody's crazy about it. So these guys can't win. I just think,
difference.
They make these moves, and when they work out, they work out. When they don't, they don't. But to just say that a guy like Jim Leland forgot the game of baseball, like you say, is insanity, yo.
There's a difference. In the A-Rod situation now, I'd have to go back. The difference with an A-Rod situation is I can see the view that people have of A-Rod at the end of the day, he can always run into a ball and make something happen, which is why Miguel Cabrera continues to hit third when he's clearly not okay, right? But when you have a guy whose skill set is not conducive to hitting leadoff, and now he's struggling, now there's no reason to hit him leadoff. The guy doesn't walk, and he's not stealing bases. So why is he hitting leadoff? And now, sure enough, today he's finally hitting eighth. But that's my point, is these guys wait way too long to adjust because they're so conditioned to the, over time these guys are going to get hot, and over time in the playoffs everything matters. Why John Farrell, his team is 8 for 100, and they don't try and produce runs, and they're just waiting for the next guy to get a huge hit. Sometimes if you get one run, Mike, you and I played on college team that really struggled. And it was amazing. If you got one run, it felt like you got 50 and everyone relaxes. And when you don't get that run, then you press that much more. And that's the problem, these guys. They just wait way too long. And I don't think any of them are very good. I've told you, I think Girardi's great with offensive guys, and he's awful with pitching. And what's the reason with pitching, Mike? He uses the same guys and hopes over time they're going to be okay, and he always leaves them in there too long. And that's the problem. So I'm not saying Leland doesn't know anything, but he is so old school about this guy's okay, he's going to be fine. Like Mattingly's doing it right now. Hanley Ramirez can't even move, and he can't make contact, and yet he continues to hit him third. What's the point?
Oh,
everyone knows he's got a broken rib.
Right, and I know what you mean, but who are some guys you like? Because for the past few years,
I like Gardenhire a lot. I like Gardenhire a lot. I also... like I said, I think Girardi offensively is very good. He always seems to be in the right situation. He always seems to have the Yankees like in a situation where when they are rallying, they never have an automatic out up. He manages his bench really well. I think Freddie Gonzalez in Atlanta is okay, but he never really wins enough, so that doesn't give me a lot. But I think when I watch how he manages his team, he always seems to get the most out of his team, and he never, leaves the guy in too long. I do think Socha's really good, but I think Socha's been there a little too long, where now he's Socha used to be known, as I'm sure Santa and Mike, you guys know, he used to be the king of the hit and run, and now all of a sudden he waits for Pujols to drive everyone in, and then when they stink, he doesn't move them enough. I could tell you who I think the worst manager is, and Mike knows, Ron Washington's the worst manager in baseball, and there's no question about that.
You can say all you want about that, dude, but what have the Texas Rangers ever won before he got there?
What have they won with him there? How many big games, how many saves has Ron Washington's teams done? That's because he has a lot of talent, but he doesn't know what he's doing to get the most out of them when they're struggling. Anybody can coach when the teams are good.
Well, there was only so much he could do, in all honesty, against that San Francisco pitching staff. What did they score, like 7 runs in 5 games or?
Yeah,
but
what about he doesn't have guys in, Nelson Cruz didn't have him in the right position. you and I, if you think Ron Washington's a good manager, then you know, we are not on the same page. I think Tony La Russa is annoying.
I'm a little offended you didn't mention Joe Madden once.
Well, I think here's my thing about Joe Madden. I think Joe Madden is great. I think that he's the only guy willing to change lineups all the time. But I think sometimes he is a little too into Santa, he's the type of guy he would squeeze with Russell Martin, in my mind. And I don't like that. I think he does a little too much of that. What I think he's great at is he'll say, this guy's hitting well, I'm going to hit him lead off. I'm going to get him going. Like, I think he's great at getting players hot and keeping them hot. I think he's bad at sometimes he thinks, you know what, no one's expecting a squeeze, so I'm going to do a squeeze here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I got to tell you one thing real quick, and we're going to wrap it up. But yep. Me and Mike are going to come down to one of the games you coach this year and just nitpick. We're just going to watch every move you make, every motion to the bullpen, every sign you give.
Coach Abatey is the king of letting. He admits he always lets. He likes to let big innings happen, and I'm the king of, especially early on, I play for one or two runs to get the other team on their heels, and then I try to blow it open. So you'll definitely see that I definitely don't just sit and watch it.
And just before you go, how many championships you got over there,
Ron? We have none. We're working on it.
Okay. I just want to make sure. All right, well, that's great. Oh, from New Canaan. Oh, always welcome on here, brother. I don't agree with much you say, dude, but it's always good to have you on. We got a couple guys on hold. Before we take a break, I want to get to one call here. You've been waiting on hold for a while. Going out to line number two. You are on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this?
It's Nowski. It's Nick.
Hey, how you doing, brother? What's going on?
Going on, Dan. What's going on, man?
What's up, bud?
How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, man.
So what do you got for us, Nick?
Well, I was interested in that Hall of Fame talk there a little while ago. Looking at the 2014 potential class here, we got three first ballots. We got Maddox, Glavin, and Frank Thomas. What do you think?
Well, hey, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now. I mean, you know my opinion about first ballot, but Maddox and Frank Thomas are no doubt Hall of Famers. To me, Tom Glavin, having watched him my whole life, and I'm gonna come off sounding like a Met fan, Brave hater. I know he's got 300 wins. He might be the last guy to get 300 wins in the history of baseball the way the game is played now. I don't put him in the same class as Frank Thomas and Greg Maddux. Danny, what do you think?
I put actually the opposite. I put the two pitchers in before I put Thomas in.
You didn't think Frank Thomas?
No, because I think 300 wins, like you said, is so hard to come by.
Well, when you're getting six inches off the plate for 20 years.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying, I think Frank Thomas is a surefire Hall of Famer, and I'd have no problem if he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I'm saying 300 wins, for me, you're in.
They kept
Don Sutton out for like a dozen years with 300 wins, which was a travesty. You should not be kept out with 300 wins. Thomas should be in, no question.
But you're looking at, like, I'm talking about feared players in there. I mean, Greg Maddux, let's just keep out of the conversation. One of the best pitchers of all time.
Right.
You get the other two guys. Who is the guy, a general manager, right out of the team? Tom Glavin or Frank Thomas? I think Frank Thomas, in my opinion.
Well, I mean,
in their prime, even as good as Tom Glavin ever was.
It depends on what you're looking for. I mean, you know, if you need pitching, I mean, I'm being obvious, but pitching, it's Tom Glavin.
Blank slate. You're just, everybody's going out there. You're in heaven somewhere. I'm taking Frank Thomas.
Mike Messina is also off on the list, too. What do you think about Moose?
Who?
Who was that? I'm sorry.
Messina.
See, Moose is a guy I think is very borderline.
He's
ahead of Andy Pettit for me, for sure. I mean, this guy was, you know, his big bugaboo all the time. He kept getting 19-win season. He was doing it for a Baltimore team that was clearly not a team conducive to winning a lot of games for a while.
Right.
And then he comes to the Yankees, and the Yankee fans never really embraced themselves to him. But he did very well for the Yankees. I mean, he had a good Yankee career. I would have no problem with him getting in there. I think he's like Nick, you had him in a different tier as those three guys. I think those three guys are all eventually getting in the Hall of Fame. They probably will all be first ballot, even though I do put Glavin a step below. I'm a believer that Messina should be in the Hall of Fame.
See, I couldn't put Messina in until Kat and John get in. Jim Catt and Tommy John, to me, two of the best left-handers of all time, they're not in. They both have better career numbers than a guy like Messina. And to me, as we know, my steroid standpoint, if my steroid viewpoint, I would never vote for Pettit. I would never vote for Andy Pettit. As good a pitcher as he was, as good as
Pettit's
a
borderline, I agree.
I would never vote for him.
Yeah, people want to talk about Andy Pettit having all these wins in the playoffs. The guy's got an ERA close to 4. I mean, he played for the Yankees. I mean, everybody. He also pitched in, like, more games than anybody else. And he had an ERA like 3.9. I mean, Andy Pettit is a very good pitcher, and you know, steroids aside, I still don't think he gets in as good as he was. I put Mussina definitely ahead of Andy Pettit.
So would I.
Steroids aside.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can make that argument. Yeah. I don't disagree with it.
And my take with Frank Thomas was – he was my take with Frank Thomas was he was never connected to any PEDs or anything. He was one of the only guys in that whole generation that never his name never came up with anything, you know.
Yeah, not only did he not, he was the only guy that volunteered to testify and take a drug.
Yeah,
test.
He
I
went.
Mean,
he, that's
he was
right.
Guy,
he went
he
to what's his name and said, "I'll come and talk. Let me, I'll clear the air." He was the only one whose name didn't come up, you know.
Yeah, he went up to Mitchell during the Mitchell report and said, I'll come up and do whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I remember having his rookie card where he was on that USA team,
yeah.
And his arms were just as big back then when he was 20 years old. Well, he was that
Yeah, I remember I got his Upper Deck rookie card still laying around there somewhere.
And he was a monster back then, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
See, Frank Thomas, to me, is one of the best line-to-line power hitters I've ever seen in my life. And I agree with you both in the sense that when you look at him when he first came up to his 12th year in the league, he was the same size. And I've made the argument for years now, he seems like one of the real good guys in baseball, but Jim Thome, when you see his first big league homer in an empty Yankee Stadium, he hits on the line, he had legs like spindles and a head like Beetlejuice, and within 10 years, he was the biggest guy on the planet. So you can only deduce from that in the era that he played, but my point being, not to trash Thome, but Thomas never had that. Thomas was just a moose from the minute he came in the league, and he just ripped dives from line to line.
Yeah.
Thomas to me is a surefire Hall of Famer. All I'm saying is I would put the pitchers with 300 wins in before I put in the first baseman. That I don't believe he has 500 homers, am I right, Thomas?
I don't know. He's probably just shy of 500, but, I mean, he put up just gaudy numbers.
Yeah,
he had some of those years when he was – I mean, he put up triple crown-type
right.
numbers where he had a big average, big RBI, big home run numbers, he's just an absolute stud, one of those big front-foot hitters, which I love. I'm a front-foot hitter myself. Well, Nick, thanks for joining us, buddy, and obviously call in any time. I appreciate you calling. All right, buddy?
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
All
right, it's Nick from Norwalk. Now, we're going to take a quick commercial break, come back and give you our picks. We're going to give you our best commercial we have to offer, which I think we'll have.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They weren't rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys wrapping up the show with our picks as always, which, I mean, I'm unofficial tally, I'm pretty sure I'm like 60%, 70%.
Legitimately?
I have no idea. I don't think I'm doing very well, but I think this week is my week I turn it around.
I hope so.
I'm really hoping. So you start it off. Give me your pick.
Yeah.
Give me some lines. I'm going to spit out some winners.
Let's start out with your team since they're at the top here. We got the Patriots at the Jets. Pats started at lane 3. They're now lane 4. So would you like to start or do you just want my quick
pick? I'm going to start by saying if you remember last week with your Bills pick, what did you keep saying over and over? Why did you take the Bills?
Because I was on a hot streak with them.
But in addition to that, you kept saying, why is this line not
yeah,
bigger?
Yeah, right, right.
Why is this line not bigger? I know they're playing in the Meadowlands and MetLife Stadium, and I keep saying, why is this line not bigger? Because I know that they have injuries, but I also know the Jets. Like, the Jets aren't going to come win this game. But why is this line not bigger? Why is this line not bigger? This has, to me, written all over it, a heartbreaking loss for the Jets, where they're able to hang around the injuries in their secondary, the injuries. Obviously, Will Fork is out. Amendola I mean, looked like he got killed last week.
Yeah.
You look at all these things. This is going to be just like their first matchup. They can hang around. I don't think the Jets are going to win, but I think the Jets are going to lose one of those 21-20 type games where Brady drives them down the field and wins 24-21 type thing. So I'm taking the Jets, not just to cover, which is kind of a BS thing to me, but I don't see them winning. But why is this line only moved from 3 to 4 when you got a 5-1 team against the crazy Jets who are up and down all the time?
See, I actually like the Patriots. And you know, I'm not the NFL guy here, but I like the Patriots to the tune of, like a 28-14 type game. I really do. I watched the Jets on Sunday against Pittsburgh.
It's impossible to bet on. If I was actually betting money, you can't bet on the Jets.
No, they're so
all over.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like anything I saw with the Jets from the offense, from an offensive standpoint. The defense didn't look that bad. Was I wrong? I mean, what they 16,
no.
19
yeah,
points,
one big play. Yeah, they did one big play.
But I just
Marty got burnt. And he admitted he got burnt. There's no excuse about it.
I you know, you watch what Brady did on Sunday against New Orleans, which I love to watch. And I just think he can throw the ball around a little bit, take advantage of some different things. I like the Patriots laying the 4. You're going to take the Jets with the 4.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Jets getting the points. What else you got?
Let's go to Miami, where the Dolphins are hosting the Bills. And the Dolphins are laying 8. And I'm going to make mine really short and sweet. I'm taking Thaddeus again. And I'm taking the 8 points. This is 2 in a row now. If Tony D's listening, just get your hard hat on for another Bills cover. All they do, I texted you Sunday. They do is cover when Santa takes them.
And you know what? Who I am? I'm the guy at the roulette wheel that's like, red is hit 15 times in a row, black's got ahead. I got to bet against the Bills because they keep burning me.
Yeah.
And I look at Thaddeus. I look at the Dolphins, who I liked before the season. And they're 3-2, and they're doing well, and I like their quarterback. I think that this has got blowout written all over it.
Yeah.
And part of me is that stupid gambler who is like, I'm losing. I got to keep doubling down against the Bills. But I think this game is going to be a laugh. I think this is a game where I didn't take him in my knockout, but I took Green Bay in my knockout. This was my second one because I'm like, Miami's going to win this game. And the only reason I didn't is because I had your stupid voice in my head going, the Bills always cover. Bills always cover. They always got a chance.
Maybe you should listen to me for once. You'd be all right.
I'd be all right. I have the money in my pocket. So I'm taking Miami on an absolute route, like a 35-3 route.
All right. So lock up the Bills. Let's go to Monday night where the Giants, the winless New York football Giants, are at home laying 3 to the Purple People Eaters that will be flying in from the Twin Cities this week.
This is your show here. This is your team.
My world right here.
Now, you don't have Big Ben quarterbacking, as you would hope.
No.
You've got the
Josh
one and only
Freeman.
Josh Freeman.
I love the Vikes.
You do love the Vikes?
I absolutely love them. I love AP to get going. I think Freeman will play well. And I'm waiting for the game when my Vikings defense puts everything together, and what better team to do it against than the struggling Giants. That's the way I see it. It's a Monday night showcase. Neither team has anything to play for except pride, if either one of them has any of that left. I like the Giants. I like them. I like the Vikings to win on the field. I'm going to give you a score, 27-21.
Yeah?
There it is. They moved the ball with Josh Freeman.
I'm going to tell you that. I'm going to give you a two-parter here.
Yeah.
You hate fantasy? I have the Browns. We have the Browns D, my fantasy team. I split with my cousin Cole. And we said, they're playing Green Bay. And I'm like, I don't want to keep them. What do you got? And he goes, why don't we take the Vikings against the Giants? You can get some turnovers, points-wise, it's worth it.
Yeah.
So I hope to God you're right. And we did. We picked them up, and they are our starting defense this week. But this is the game of Giants win. This is the game. And I've been a Vikings guy.
Yeah,
lost a lot of money on your Vikings.
I know.
The Vikings and the Idaho Vandals
have
cost me almost my marriage. My marriage is in shambles because of your Vikings and your Idaho Vandals.
Your wife was angry before.
Yeah, well, that's why.
Yeah,
that's right. My daughter's upstairs was eating Cheerios for dinner because I'm betting on the freaking Vikings. But I think that finally the Giants have one of those games where Eli, and then all the Giants fans will be calling us Wednesday night telling me why Eli is an elite quarterback because he had his thing. I, you know what? I thought going into the season the Vikings defense was good. How many games do I have to wait for them to show me that they're doing it?
A lot.
Apparently until week 7.
Yeah.
And that's when they're going to turn it on. Same thing with the Giants. I mean, the Giants aren't doing well. I think they will turn the ball over. I think they're going to have some problems. But I think the Giants are going to have some big plays. I think Eli throws for 300-plus yards.
on a couple of big-time scores to his wide receivers. And I like the Giants winning pretty comfortably. I think this is one of those games where fourth quarter is garbage time for the Giants.
Really?
Unfortunately for you. Now, what are your bonus picks? Give me your first bonus pick, brother.
My first bonus pick, and this is a first for me on the Tri-State Sports Guys, I'm staying in the National Football League.
It's not a parlay?
No.
With some late whack team?
Well, listen, here's the thing. You got two bonus games.
Yeah.
Because of the Giants and Tri-State playing each other. I'm picking the Broncos Sunday night in Indy, lane six, because Peyton seems to have a good head on his shoulders. But a man can only pick so much. And Jim Irsay, the Colts owner's comments about how they should have 400 Super Bowls by now and all this clown talk, a little crap city like Indianapolis, all of a sudden now they have a lot to say, they're a football like hotbed. I think Peyton comes in and just lights them up. And I don't know how many points the Broncos defense will give up, but I think you're looking at like a 40-21 type game. That's what I think, 38-21. Somewhere in that realm, I think Peyton throws for 350 plus and just has enough, and the Colts fans leave trying to buy Broncos jerseys with Peyton's number 18 on the back. That's what I think.
You could probably see the anger on my face because one of my bonus picks is the same exact game, and I'm going in the same exact direction as you. I don't like – it's not fun. It's not entertaining for me and you to pick the same thing.
Yeah.
I have the same exact – like what? My first bonus pick is like, the Broncos are going to run away with this game. They had this last game, and you know, they scored 35 points, and everybody talks about what's wrong with the Broncos because they let the Jacksonville Jaguars hang around. This game, I mean, these two teams, I mean, the Colts, they had the nice win against Seattle, and, they're a nice team. They're two different level teams.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a game, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
I think that the Broncos – you know, like they have these bad starts, it seems to be, like week after week, the Broncos can't get going until the second half, and then they pull away. This is going to be one of those games where Peyton Manning is sitting there saying, I'm pissed off that everybody, A, is saying what's wrong with me because I only threw two touchdowns and I threw a pick six. And then B, I got all this, you know, this crap about me not winning Super Bowls. Yeah, this is going to be one of those games where it's just on all cylinders. And I think the defense does respond. I don't even think they scored 21 against them. I think this is going to be one of those real routes, like 42-10 type routes type thing. I got that confident in it. If I still had the Broncos to pick, I would pick them again in my knockout.
So you know what this means? They got no shot.
Well, so that means bet heavy Colts outright.
Yeah.
All right, so what's your last bonus? We got some sort of three-teamer teaser?
I'm going with the big college game of the week. I'm going with the Florida State Seminoles heading into Death Valley. It's an 8 or 9 o'clock kickoff on ABC.
We might as well take this time. We have a few minutes. Let's talk about that game.
Let's talk about it.
I mean, you got the young quarterback of Florida State.
Jameis Winston.
Haven't beaten anybody, but they are the top five. They're five, right? They're ranked fifth, and Clemson's three. Clemson had the big win week one. I mean, on the surface, this is not the game I'm picking. On the surface, I'm saying Clemson's going to win this one big.
Right.
Now, what are you thinking about this game? How's this game going to go?
The thing I'm hearing is they're proposing this as the Jameis Winston versus Todd Boyd show, the two talented quarterbacks, one very young, one a veteran. And I'm not even going to go that route because I think they're both elite college quarterbacks. I think Boyd has a little bit more street cred. He's a little bit older. He's done it more. But everybody's harkening back to that Georgia game just a little bit 2 weeks ago. And the thing people aren't mentioning this week, like Lou Holtz, is Georgia came in there with no defense. None. And FSU's defense is elite.
It's legit, yeah.
It's one of the top two or three defenses in the entire country.
Okay? Absolutely.
So I see the typical Clemson midseason, last 10 years since Bowden's kid was coaching there, blow-up game where Winston controls the game enough, doesn't make the big mistakes in that Valley.
In his first test.
It's his first test, but I think that defense – whether it's prevalent in Winston's mind or not, he knows he can fall back on that defense. The defense can bail you out of trouble.
Well, he said in his first interview ever, he was like, I got a great defense, I got great weapons on offense.
And I don't love Clemson's defense. In fact, I don't even really like it that much. I like FSU like 34-24.
Yeah, really?
I like them laying the 3 points. I think it's a complete Vegas line bet. I'm laying those points, and I have no worries in my mind laying the three. At all, I think that the Boyd-Winston isn't even the marquee matchup. I think it's the two defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And FSU's is by far the best in the ACC, if not one of the two, three best in the country.
So is that your bet? Your bonus bet is just that?
FSU.
I like that.
Laying the three. Winning
by
10.
The three. All right, I'm going to go against convention here. Now, part of this has to do with my thought process to my knockout bet. So, obviously, to this point, I'm still in it. We started with 60 or some odd things. We're down to about 14 people left in this pool. And basically, my thing is just betting against Jacksonville. So, the pick this week would then be San Diego. Now, I'm going through my crazy gambler mindset.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, West Coast team playing on the West Coast on a Monday night, going to the East Coast, pretty far trip, playing a 1 o'clock game. That is like 101 if you're a gambler. You see a West Coast team, especially playing a late game, let alone a Monday game, coming over to the East Coast playing an early game. I think this has got one of those trap games set up. I think, you know, as much as I don't put a lot of credence into Jacksonville's performance last week, you know, they got the pick six and, you know, did some things. I think that you're going to see Jacksonville hang around in this game and be a scare for those guys that take San Diego. I think San Diego pulls this out, but I believe they're getting 9. I don't know. What's the line in the post?
I got 7.5 here.
7.5. And it opened at, like, I think 8.5. I've seen it as high as 9. I think now it's down to 7.5. I'm taking Jacksonville here, getting the points.
Wow.
I don't think they win. But this is going to be one of those, like, scares where people, crazy people last week were like, oh, it's 14-12. You know, it's 21-19. I think it's going to be one of those games where Jacksonville's like, is this the week we win? They don't win, but I could see that jet lag hitting the San Diego Chargers. And you know the San Diego Chargers. They just lost to Raiders a couple weeks ago. I'm blown out.
Can you give me a score?
Yeah, I'll give you a score.
Please.
I'll give you a 24-17 win by the hook.
I like it.
What do you think about that? 24-17 won by the hook.
I never
liked
winning by the hook. But, yeah.
But I think it's a 17-14 Jacksonville lead going into the fourth. Type game.
Is this, are you telling our listeners, like, you know, ship the money in?
Yes.
Really?
Jacksonville is the bet this week.
Can we just start next week with making fun of this pick?
Give me a dollar amount. I'll put it on the game. You give me a dollar. Just pick a dollar
right.
Between 1 and 100,000, and I'll put it on that game. That's how confident I am.
I believe it. I can see. They can't see you right now. I can. You're terrifying me right now.
Between $1 and $100,000. Throw a number out there, and I'll put it on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
$50. Put it right on them. Put it right on them.
Give me a guy. You know a guy?
I know a lot of guys. You know a lot more guys than you think I do.
There you go. All right, well, Danny, it's a great show, as always. We got a couple great calls. I think I really want DJ to be a reoccurring caller because I think he's very opinionated. This guy went toe-to-toe with Mad Dog. I'd like to have him on whenever he's available.
I disagree with a lot of that discussion, but yeah, he is a good guest.
But you and O were just like, buddy, you're two peas in a pod.
We don't even like each other.
Well, personally, you don't.
Yeah.
But you could bond against the fact that I'm wrong, and then you could just kind of like, oh, yeah, we like, yeah, we should have suicide squeeze.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's because we both weigh around 220.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You know, it's those big husky guys sticking together.
Yeah, I'm in that boat, too, because
yeah, exactly.
I'm north of 220 myself. All right, well, that's the end of the show. Tri-State Sports Guys, obviously always check us out every Wednesday between 8 and 10 o'clock. Check us out on our website, tristatesportsguys.com or facebook.com/tristatesportsguys. On Twitter, @tristate_sports. Hopefully next week, you know, we're going to do some college basketball next week, which I'm excited about.
Can't wait.
Excited to get back into it. If you're a college basketball guy, I want to talk about college basketball. Kevin Ollie, UConn Huskies. You're going to be a UConn Husky fan this year.
It's not even.
No, we're just talking about how your team just likes to buy people. All right.
That.
Well, now hopefully we have a nice guest for you. Hopefully Tony D and Neil are back in the studio. Check us out next week. That's the end of our show.